when I was a child, I dreamed. Jimothy?
I dreamed
almost every night.
Welcome in to season 3, episode 1, Unstable Discourse.
My God. Wow.
We're back. It's the third time we've done this. This whole we're back thing. Somebody want to comment on how it's been a long time since we've done this?
Technically, it's the second time we've been back.
Right.
Because the first time we couldn't have been back.
Well, right. Correct. But yeah. We've also said we're back every time we do a bonus episode. And like we just announced we're back.
It's been a
sure,
lot of
yeah. That's mm-hmm. like somebody saying it's the first annual. Calm down.
Right.
You don't know that yet.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm guilty of doing that too.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, it's the first ever inaugural Birdie Bowl. We'll see if it happens again next
right.
year.
Yeah, exactly.
For the record, I'm pretty sure it's happening next year, guys.
We'll see.
Yeah, welcome in, guys. It's very cool to be back. And we're throwing it back old school. It's just the crew. It's the OGs. We got Ryan Fancher of Unstable Disc Golf.
Yes,
here.
Sir.
Sean Callahan of Delwood Disc Golf.
Hey.
Jason Callahan.
Hello, everybody.
How do you want me to intro you from? I feel like I've done.
I'm still a bag of tricks.
Yeah. And Delwood.
I'm still technically of Delwood. Sure.
I like it. I just wanted to make sure.
Guilty by association.
Bagwood.
Bagwood.
Dell of Tricks.
I'm Alex Seminary of Disc Golf Chicago, and we are also joined by Sheila Callahan is in the room with us. Hopefully the mics picked that up. And we have Lauren Lakeberg, LL, the disc golf photographer, with us. We are at the boardroom right across from 933 upstairs at Embers. I think this is our favorite place to record, right?
I like to be here. This feels right to me.
It feels right.
The vibe is good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cozy room.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Cozy space.
I like getting drinks before we start, but don't get me wrong. When we do this at the barn, you guys usually host very well as well. There's always something.
That's true.
Nice.
We'll have a couple there.
Feel like that's a fall thing or like a late summer or a fall
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Vibe with that.
Mm-hmm. As long as the fridge is working.
Right.
Of course.
Yes.
I'm sure we'll be recording at other places this season. We're going to do some episodes. I know we have a live episode planned at some point this season.
Mm-hmm.
We'll let you know where that's going to be when we know. I'm sure we'll figure out some other field trips.
Yeah.
At least one. God, I hope so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite things we did last season. The sort of ethos of this episode, we're going to be talking about all the things that have been happening in the sort of off season from last time, from the end of season 2 to today. There's been so many projects going on recently with all of us individually. So we're going to recap some of that stuff. We're also going to talk about what you can expect from this season. It's a little departure from our standard format, but that's a good thing. We're starting out fresh this season.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And if they don't like it,
no, man.
You know what Ryan says. Wait, speaking of the F word, I asked you about this the other night.
Yeah.
Have you figured out how you're going to edit the F word this season?
My biggest hang up with this whole third season has been, what in the
no, man.
Am I going to bleep things out with? Because it's hard to beat.
The clown horn was hard to beat.
The clown horn was hard to beat. But the
managed.
Michaels.
Yeah, the Michaels.
The
good.
Michaels were like, oh, they were so perfect. Yeah. And so since our last episode, I have really been struggling with it. And the anxiety has risen exponentially in the last week or so because I knew we were going to do this. And then this last Thursday, we were going to record. The weather turned on us. We weren't able to safely get here. It didn't make sense to do. So, but the moment we were all like, nah, let's not do it. I was like, oh, thank God. Because I really couldn't think. And not even that I had to do it now because I'm going to edit it later.
Right, right, right.
I was talking
I would like it if you just edited out your little orgasm noise that you just did.
No, I'm
going to.
Use
that all season.
No, exponential.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah.
Of all the things that you were concerned about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was talking with Sean and Sheila at Hellwood on Friday. I think it was Sheila that gave me the inspiration and all of a sudden it clicked. And so
Sheila's got a pretty good idea.
Instantly that relief fell over me. So I'm good.
Big surprise.
I can't wait to see what, if you do that and how's that going to sound if that's the way you go.
You want to hear how it sounds?
No, man.
There you go.
No, man.
I know that the reason for cutting out the F word was never because, oh, we wanted to be squeaky clean. It's more because it's funnier to replace it with something else.
It's way funnier to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I miss the clown horn.
When you do it, I'll do the clown horn. Go ahead.
No. Is that what you meant?
No.
No. You were supposed to say
no, well, you got to
so
put
he
a,
could put the clown
well,
horn.
You got to put a
there.
Fuck over his clown horn now. That's
right.
How that works.
Right.
It's opposite
right. Okay.
Day.
Yeah.
You'll figure it out. You always figure it out.
Okay.
So let's
Did that just happen?
Yeah, I think so. It did?
Okay, all right, good.
You guys want to just start talking about things we're fired up about?
What is this called? I'm sorry, what is this segment called?
This segment? Yeah, well, let's get into this segment. It's called Fired Up.
It's timid coming out of the gates. It's fine.
Yeah, we can build every episode. Yeah, more intense.
It'll get a little deeper next time.
Yeah.
Ryan, you never like to go first.
I never do. I have a tentative fired up.
Okay.
I have a few that are culminating into my fired upness. Fired upness.
Lay it on us.
A, baseball season, although they have pushed it off another week. Pitchers and catchers have reported.
Everybody, Harry Doyle here, welcoming all you friends of the feather to another season of Indians baseball.
I'm stoked for that.
Are you going to make a pitchers and catchers?
That's too easy.
Yeah, pitchers and catchers. Yeah,
low hanging fruit.
You thought it though.
Yeah, it was there, but low hanging fruit, man.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then my wife and I are in the process of looking for a new home, which actually sucks a giant dick right now because there are no homes.
That was not the low hanging fruit.
Boom. Yeah. Yeah, there are no homes available to look at, so. Sean and Sheila actually went and helped me look at a home that initially kind of looked cool online and then turned out it was probably a meth den of sorts.
Probably.
Had like weird padlocks on the bedrooms and extra living rooms, and every room had a weird step into it, and there were cracks in the walls. There was blood on one of the walls.
Rooms that used to be garages that had like weird catwalk.
But
are you describing a house you saw or Hellwood?
Yes, exactly.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Where was it?
And it sounds awful and you wouldn't want to live there, but it had a really big four-car garage. And so,
get a couple more GTIs.
Yeah. So that's been really tough. But overall, I'm excited to find that perfect house. So that's all. That's all I got. Yeah.
Keepy it.
What was the first part? You said there was two things. The house was the second thing. What was the first one?
Baseball.
Baseball. So that has been part of your fired up on each season, I think.
It probably because it times perfectly with the start of our season. Yeah.
I really hope that gets figured out soon because there's a special guest that we are very potentially going to have on as long as the baseball season works out the right way.
Sure.
Yeah, that's
even if it doesn't work out, maybe that's easier for us to get said.
Yeah, it's just a matter of that person being in our area. Sean.
Yes, sir.
What you fired up about?
Oh, I feel like every season I say that I am excited for the season to start. This is no different. We are way ahead of planning. On disc golf scene, that's a ton of fun.
Yeah,
you guys really... discgolfscene.com, come on, Pete. Mm-hmm. So knowing that it was going to be more than likely another crazy season, I was like, well, we're doing this whole tour series thing. Let's get them all out on disc golf scene. And a really cool new function on disc golf scene is that there's a series tab where you can have all of those events that are part of that series where it's tracking all of the points for you all year long.
Dude, that's awesome.
Super cool. So stoked to have that all out there for people to be planning the season. Even though we've done really good things the last couple of years, planning was not part of that. And it was kind of like, I'm building stuff on discgolfscene.com 2 weeks before the event. Now the whole season's laid out. So stoked.
It's a great feeling to have that off your plate. Yeah, yeah. And I also like that you guys leveled up with what you're doing to promote the events. The video stuff you're doing with Doc, all the logos are like, it looks and feels like a series now, which I think it probably always did to you guys, but now from the outside looking in, it really has that feel of a series.
Well, with the logo and the names and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Now it does feel like it should have felt all along.
We got our poop in a group.
Mm-hmm.
As they like to say.
No doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah. All that stuff looks really great. I've been loving seeing that. I bet Doc is having a great time doing all the video stuff as well.
He is like
in his
element. I have a feeling this year he's just going to be behind the camera the whole time. Good. And I want to make that happen.
Good.
Because that's where he wants to be and where he's at his most creative.
So. There doesn't need to be three or four people in the tent all the time.
Right. Speaking of him being behind the camera, he came up to me the other night at Hellwood and I got so nervous for him to put the camera in my face. And I was like, I got to say something cool to make sure it makes it in the promo video. And I couldn't think of anything. And I'm sure it's going to get cut. And the light was like super bright in my face. And I was like, I'm squinting and totally blew an opportunity to be in one of Doc's cool videos, but we'll see. Maybe he likes it.
Oh, I'm sure.
Oh, it'll make a video.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe just the blooper reel.
The blooper reel.
Oh, I would actually prefer that. That'd be great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Jason.
Yes, sir.
Please tell us something you're fired up about.
Yeah. So I'm going to preface this by saying I don't consider myself a gamer. That isn't an adjective I would use for myself. But I own every Sony system except for the PS5 and every Nintendo system except for the Switch.
And you said
and you're not a gamer.
Not a-
I don't game a lot, but I have them for the rare opportunity or I have time to use them.
Sure. What about your Twitch channel?
Well, that's separate.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, sure. I have been going through, I'm very particular on everything. I keep all the boxes, all the booklets, I keep everything. And I finally to a point where I'm like, I'm just kind of tired of looking at stuff. I want less stuff in my life, so I'm going through and trying to get rid of stuff.
That's right? A good feeling.
It is a great feeling. It's like it's like weight loss.
Yeah, you literally feel lighter.
Yes, yeah. So I have been pricing out some of the stuff that I have, and I have some pretty rare stuff that I'm super excited to like maybe take to a pawn shop or put online and say, yo, like I know what I've got, and this thing is worth $500, $600, whatever, $1,200. Some of the stuff is, it's insane. Yeah. Yeah. The value of any cartridge based system post SNES, that there's like a lull in gaming where it was still cartridge based and nobody played because that's when Sony took over
the discs, right?
And it all switched to discs. But Nintendo still had a couple of systems where they were pumping out cartridges.
Sure.
And because of that, nobody was buying it. So it's all super rare. Totally. I have a mint condition Conker's Bad Fur Day for the N64 with booklet and box that looks like I just took it off the shelf last week that I could easily put on for $500 to start and end up in a bidding war.
Totally. Some listeners getting a boner right
yeah.
now.
Yeah. If people know that game, they're like, holy shit, that's impossible. But I do. Mm. Like super rare, like Castlevania games for the Game Boy Advance stuff where they super limited release, but I was able to scoop one up and now the thing's going for $275.
The Game Boy Advance, we had a Game Boy, but the Game Boy Advance, the 3DS, all those, like I found boobs at that point. Like that sure, was like, right. that was the turning point for me. Like yeah. Game Boy. And then I was like, oh my God, there's girls. Girls! All I really want is girls. And then dropped off the face of the planet. I've never even held a Nintendo 3DS. I don't know what it looks like. Yeah. I don't know how to play it. I don't know any of those until
once you like play with your first nipple, you were like, I don't need joysticks anymore.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Same. Yeah. So like the fact that you have all of that stuff is like that's crazy to me.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome researching some of these and finding out the value of something that I paid $29.99 for 25 years ago is now worth $300.
Well, my next question is, my question is, would you actually sell and get rid of it? Or at the last minute, are you going to say,
you know,
shit,
there was that I have this memory attached to this thing.
I do still have some serious nostalgia associated with this stuff. So I'm a little on the fence. For right now, I'm going through all the boxes that I have in storage and kind of putting it all together and pricing it and writing that price on the box just so I have like this mental note of
right on the box in permanent marker and then scratching all the corners. And then,
Right.
Okay, good.
No, the box I'm putting it all
in. Yes, I know.
But yeah, that's I've had a lot of fun just kind of like finding out this stuff worth holding on to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a little experience with this recently as well. I wanted to buy my nephew a Game Boy. He started to get into Pokemon. Mm. I was like, oh, he'll love an actual Game Boy with the Pokemon game, and I would love to like talk to him while he like plays like this.
80s green screen Game Boy?
No, like Game Boy Color.
Oh, okay.
I probably could have gotten one of those, but that's just so hard to look at now.
Are you familiar with like Raspberry Pi and all that kind of stuff where people are like modding these things in order to make them work? Yeah. Those are pretty cool.
So it ended up being really hard to find a regular Game Boy. Like I had to do a lot of searching and I couldn't find Pokemon at all. Like, and the ones I could find were hundreds of dollars.
Super rare. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So still highly collectible.
I bought the Game Boy and then I realized my nephew will never give a shit about it because he's got a cell phone. So why would he care about a Game Boy? And so now I have a Game Boy Color and no Pokemon. And I don't know if I'm ever, if I can find it, I'll play it again. But I'm not going to spend a couple
That's the thing that's tough. So I have tons of nostalgia associated with this stuff, like Super Metroid for the SNES, one of the greatest games ever in my
life.
Yeah.
I can't see a situation where I'm going to hook up my SNES and put the cartridge in and sit there and play it because I have a emulator on my phone that I paid 99 cents for
and I
went on the Pirate Bay and downloaded zipped files
right.
of every single SNES game ever made.
Yeah.
so I can just Bluetooth my PS4 controller to my phone.
That's
and
awesome.
And prop my phone up and then just play it right yeah. there. So it's like...
And when you actually do that, do you...
I would rather go to somebody that is going to have, like, look at it and go, oh my God, I own a physical copy mm-hmm. of Super Metroid.
Well, what they're going to do is buy it and then do exactly what you did.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But sit on at it that
for
point,
another 20 years doesn't matter. Sell it for yeah. twice as much. Yeah.
Yeah. On the Switch, they have the Nintendo and the Super Nintendo emulators.
Mm-hmm.
And I've gone through and they release games once every couple weeks or whatever, you mm-hmm. know, and most mm-hmm. of them you don't know. Most of them are crazy Japanese games, but a couple of them, you know, like Super Mario Kart, you're like, mm-hmm. oh, obviously I'm going to play this. And mm-hmm. the moment you turn it on, you're like,
this sucks.
Oh no, this is not,
right. good. Not as good right. as I remember.
Right.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I 6 hours a day playing that game,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
when it came out and yeah, I definitely. Can't even look at it now. It sucks to say, but
right.
yeah, you can't spend the time anymore, but having those, I don't know if I would be able to give them up.
So, I mean, there's dudes that have entire rooms of their house dedicated to mm-hmm. this collection sure. of things.
Mm-hmm.
Super cool dudes.
Yeah. right. Lots of neck beards.
Drop a cool guitar. Like,
yeah. Got it.
So I'd almost, I mean, I know what I've got and I'm going, I'm not going to like undersell it.
Yeah.
Just to get someone rid of it. Has it. But
yeah. Yeah.
if somebody wants, has that expendable income and wants it to put on display,
no man,
go for it, man.
I would say go the online route before going to a pawn shop.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I'm sure you'll get more for it and you'll like dealing directly with the person.
I want to get rid of my Game Boy Advance, for example. And yeah. I just want one dude that's willing to give me X amount and just take everything.
Right. Oh yeah. That's ideal.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know if that'll happen online, but
fingers
we'll
crossed.
See. Yeah,
I wonder how much of that is coming from like. So of course, there's other people that are like you that want that physical copy to add to their collection. But is like, is there a whole market out there for people that never had any of it that are trying to recreate this
sure.
whole system plus all the games from the jump because they never even
right.
they were born when PS2 was out, so they need. You know what
right.
I mean? Like,
they're,
is
right.
that
curious
where this value is coming from
that.
With the
yeah.
whole
yeah.
nostalgia comeback of the 80s and 90s?
I just don't think sure. if you have any tie into that in the first place that you could even get into those. Because, again, I'm playing games that I remember renting at the local mm-hmm. video store.
Chippendale Rescue Rangers for the like, NES.
Yeah. Crazy shit like that we would rent and like call up and like, hey, can yeah. we re-up? Can we like, and I would have the game for weeks, like this wrestling game for the Nintendo that was terrible. I can remember the music. It was awful. If I turn that on now, oh, I don't even.
You're
think
bored
I
can. In 2 seconds.
It's
right.
it's
right.
just not. So I can't see somebody that has grown up looking at the Switch or,
exactly.
you know, like
exactly.
at least the Xbox and stuff going back to that and saying, wow, this is awesome.
What, yeah. you mean I can only go back and forth? Like, I can't? It's 2D?
Right.
Maybe it's come full circle, though. Like, they need it to be that simple 8-bit, 16-bit system.
Actually, that's a good point, because my daughter is now 6, and she is just now starting to want to play video games.
Mm.
And everything is like, you look at the Xbox controller.
Yeah.
There are like 17 damn buttons on that thing.
Right, yeah, right.
And I'm like, no, hit the left trigger. No, 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 not the left button, the left
bumper.
Trigger. Like,
yeah.
come on. So the idea of having two buttons on one side and the D-pad on the other is kind of appealing to me to give to her to say, you can only jump and kick.
Mm,
yeah.
Right, right.
You get one button, it's right. called the action button.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so yeah. go have fun. And maybe that's the way, because that's how we learned. But maybe that's the way to get her into more video games. She's yeah. very excited to play, but I feel like now when she plays video games, I'm playing, but I just don't have control of it because I have to sit there. She can't read, so I have to read what's on the screen,
mm-hmm.
and then I have to tell her where to go and what to do, but I'm not doing it, so it's like the most frustrating video game
just
on the planet.
Go
yeah,
there.
Go
get a controller.
Go
just the warp whistle
there.
And go to
Can
level
you,
4 already.
Yeah, no, yeah. don't hit Y, hit A. Just hit. Just hit. So... If yeah, if she had
Dad,
maybe,
you're ruining this for me.
Yeah. We tried
Give me your phone back.
No, man.
This.
Yeah. We downloaded because I have the Xbox Game Pass or whatever. We downloaded Zoo Tycoon. I was like, that sounds awesome. You build your own zoo and take care of animals
right.
and stuff.
I downloaded that too, and it's so complex I've never
Holy,
started playing it.
5 minutes in and you have to go like clean the elephants and you have to like I could barely do it.
Really?
And yeah. so Nora, in the 5 minutes that I had setting up the game,
yeah.
she was over playing Legos. She's like, nah, I'm good. Like,
wow.
I can watch elephants on YouTube. I don't need
right,
to watch
right,
this.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
I don't need fake elephants. Yeah. I have real ones on my screen.
Yeah, yeah, it's terrible. I'm stoked for you.
Yeah.
I still don't see you giving that stuff up, but
I'd rather
this process is fun, but the next one is going to be tough for me.
Yeah, painful. Yeah.
I'd rather see you have that room you're describing of like all the stuff set up.
Mm-hmm. Ideally,
that
I
that is
would.
What I imagine yes, you to have.
I feel like I might be that guy, but it takes so much time and effort that I don't know that I would bother as well. There's days where I am that dude, and then there's days where I'm like, nope, get rid of it. I want it out of my life.
Yeah.
Guess I'm a Gemini.
Well, that explains it. We could have led with that.
Yeah.
Just ask the stars.
Yeah. Why didn't you say that?
I should have led with that.
Hey, hey, Alex. Hey.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, Benny.
You fired up about something?
Yes, a lot of things. Quickly, I'll go one, fired up about that Jomez video. That was like surreal to see.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt like that whole thing happened so long ago, but it really wasn't.
No, it wasn't that long.
It also helped to put into context sort of what we're all planning Disc Golf Chicago like initiatives for 2022, and having that video drop right before we start planning all that put a lot of like gas in the tank. Like,
mm-hmm.
oh yeah, that's why this is super important. Mm-hmm. So it felt very good to see mm-hmm. that and you know, see that kind
and
of
also what was her name? Louise
McCurry. She's like a celebrity now.
Yes, that's what I was gonna say. All the comments on that YouTube were like, she's the coolest.
Yeah.
Oh,
I
really?
Wanna be Louise.
Oh,
like the comments are like, I wanna be like Louise when I grow up, or like she's the hero that this world
or
needs.
Or like the world needs to save, you know, Louise
we need
McCurry.
To protect her at all costs.
Yes, exactly.
Yes. Yeah. The comments were great.
So
I sent her an email and I was like, hey, I don't know if you've seen the video dropped, but you should look at it and look at the comments. I think you'll enjoy that. And she responded like, oh my, this is so, you know, so cool. And she's really excited about what we're doing. You know, she's still like full steam ahead on this all. So
cool.
Great.
That's really great. And then I'm also, you know, excited about the Birdie Bowl working out was a great success. We'll talk more about that a little bit later. And some of the stuff that we're starting to plan with Disc Golf Chicago is, how do I put this? I think there's a lot of us just kind of putting one foot in front of the other and just like when you're running and you're just like trying to make sure you don't fall. So you're just keep doing the next thing without really thinking all the way down the line.
Mm.
Starting a nonprofit was like a spur of the moment decision. We were like, okay, we're working with the Paul Macbeth Foundation. We're doing all this stuff. We should be a nonprofit. Go ahead, make it happen. I never really mapped out what are we going to do with that. And so now it's really starting to come to fruition. And I'm really excited about the stuff we're working on now. One of our members, Mike Stahara, he started a disc golf club at his school where he's a teacher in the city. And he's like, yo, how can you guys help me make this cool for the students? So we're like working with him and aiming towards putting on an event for like the Chicago Teachers Union, where we get lots of teachers in Chicago together and say, who would like to start a disc golf club? How can we help you make that happen?
Mm-hmm.
And start to drive like a demand from the student and from like the kids level to say there should be more facilities. We have all these kids that want to play. And even if we can get like a basket in the ground at a high school, or a couple baskets in the ground. Like we're trying to attack the idea of getting a course in the ground from lots of different directions rather than just going to the forest preserve and going to the parks district people and saying, we want this, you know, this should happen. Like we're going to start from, you know, really the ground up from lots of different areas of the
city. Attack on all fronts.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's like, hey, that it's going to take a lot longer to get there, but I think that big win is going to be built on lots of littler wins.
Mm.
So we're excited about that. And awesome. Just as last weekend, Mike is also the coach of a robotics team. So the kids literally build robots like BattleBot style, and they go to these competitions and their robot competes against other schools' robots. He brought a disc golf basket to that event where there was like a couple hundred kids there. And we sent Devin Hernandez, shout out to Devin. That's my local route shout out. He went and hung out with the kids all day and like just played disc golf with them, taught them how to do it, you know, got, you know, photos and videos. And he was there like rocking Disc Golf Chicago stuff and trying to like, I specifically sent somebody cool. Like I was like, I could go, but it's not going to inspire any kids. No kid's going to be like, that guy's into disc golf. I got to get into this. So I specifically sent, you know, a younger, cooler member, and it worked out really well. And so we're like looking at more things that we can do with schools to just like get kids excited about it. And I think that's a really like, that's like the
that's
perfect
great.
Lane for us to go down.
I'm hearing a lot of, I need to get disc golf into high schools and schools and things like that, but I never hear any success stories about it. I always hear the, we're trying to, and that's the end of it. So the fact that that's actually happening is great.
Yeah.
Good focus.
Yeah.
I think it's appropriate for us. I mean, in the midst of that, we are still talking to the Forest Preserve and we are still planning what to do with the expo this year. Where's it going to happen? There's a lot going on, but again, attacking from all fronts. Mm-hmm. And it's making you, when you put that video, the Jomez video in front of these people that have an opportunity to be part of the story, like, hey, look at the story that's unfolding now. You can help make an ending for the story by whatever your little 2% can be. Like, let's talk about what we can do together and help bring the story to the ending we all want.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it feels like the path is more clear in front of us now than it was this time last year.
Cool.
Hell yeah.
Let's keep it moving. Cool. Let's keep it moving to the Calahalander rundown. There's a lot coming up.
Boy.
I wish you would have done your fired up in the format of the Dear Diary, by the way. That was one of my favorite things last season.
Oh, Dear Diary. That was fun. Calahalander rundown, baby. We're going to start this off a little different because there are some other things still happening right now. We haven't normally talked about leagues, but we're going to talk about leagues. One specifically, that is the Hellwood Putting League.
I've been there.
Over at Hell's Gate.
I've been there.
Kicking. By the time this comes out, we will have two more. We will have a Saturday, February 26th, Hellwood Glow Flex from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. That is that you just show up, pay $20, and you can play as many rounds as you would like. Mm-hmm. Also,
so dope.
Yes, that's going to be a ton of fun. We did that once already last month on the 29th, and it was killer. We had a bunch of people come out. It was a lot easier from the perspective of both people, from us running it and from people coming out, that it was just, you know, it's not as complex. A lot easier. Just come out and putt and have a good time. And then the ninth week of Hellwood Putting League is on March 4th. I don't have it on my phone. It is the Hellwood, the week 9 of Hellwood Putting League is on Friday, March 4th. So keep an eye on that. That is going to be going live on Tuesday, the 22nd of February.
If you have not done it,
just come out.
Just come out and do it, man.
It's a good time.
It is.
It's disc golf in a haunted house. The staff out there is great. I mean, the food, the drinks,
the hosting
the vibe,
is fantastic.
The payouts. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
We are paying out so much money week
hundreds.
In, week out. Like, the hot putter was hit.
Did
I mean, how many
hit?
Times now? Four or five. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I was kind of
close.
It's
like the lottery. It's ridiculous. Getting back to that Calahalander rundown, the Dog Bowl 2 presented by none other than J-Town Disc Golf Club. It still has spots. It is still live on discgolfscene.com.
Mm-hmm.
It is on Saturday, March 12th at Old Oak Golf Course over in Homer Glen.
Mm-hmm.
Parker Road and 143rd. Get out there.
Yeah.
The following day, Sunday, March 13th, is Old Oak Double Spring Warm-Up 3.
Pick your own doubles.
Do you want to talk a little bit more about you know, these specific events? I think there's more to say about Dog Bowl. If you've never gone to it, like, you should know really what it's about. How does it work? Because it's freaking awesome.
Yep. We are raising a ton of money for the Will County Humane Society.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, we did 5K. Mm-hmm. in cash donations, and then like another $7,000 worth of dog and cat food and toys and leashes and like all kinds of stuff. They gave us a wish list of everything that they wanted specifically, which was great.
So much so that this year they've already told us that they are bringing more vehicles to take the stuff
everything.
Back because
Thank
they,
God.
Yeah, they were stuck last year. They didn't know what to do with them.
Two full vans of bottoms of vans rubbing on the road.
Yeah.
Like, it's an adoption event as well, so there will be...
They will be there,
There will
twice
be dogs
the amount of dogs
there.
As last year. They had two dogs and a puppy last year?
Three total
dogs last year, so great people, great cause, stoked to do it for them. Mm-hmm. I know this is a big thing for Leo, the Doc Borowski, to be doing, so this is one of the highlights for him.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a great time.
And on top of that,
the
Temp Disc Golf Course is phenomenal.
Yeah.
The course is great. Super proud of that.
Yeah, it's really great. It's all over the entire golf course that they are generous enough to let us use.
Are golf carts going to be
golf
in the picture?
Golf carts? Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's way long enough that if you didn't have golf carts, we probably wouldn't let you play.
Only worried about if it's mucky out, are they going to let you drive golf course?
Probably
golf
pass course. Only.
Just
like regular golf if it was raining. Yeah.
But if you've never done disc golf with a cart, it's a different thing. Like it hits different.
Yeah.
You got to do it.
And it's not a hokey course. It's a really well thought out, really great disc golf course.
Yeah, Thor and I spent a lot of time out there, many hours walking around in like knee deep snow, figuring out that track.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
Yeah,
so
that was a ton of fun. And just the venue too. I mean, Old Oak is really cool. It's got that we're not old enough to have appreciated Caddyshack properly.
Hey, everybody, we're all gonna get laid.
But this is the closest thing to it.
Yeah.
that I've ever experienced.
Lots of old walnut mahogany in that place. And a like really great bar.
Downstairs, there's like locker rooms and stuff. And every time I'm there, I'm like, man, if we just had something like this for disc golf, it would just be epic.
Yeah.
When
so
we, get,
do.
When
for,
we get
for a weekend.
Like
Correct. So yeah, Dogwell 2, come on out. Still live on Disc Golf Scene. Still plenty of spots.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, next day, if you didn't get enough of the Dogwell 2, hit up Old Oak Double Spring Warm Up 3 at the same facility. Going to be a blast. Mm-hmm. Doubles, bring your own partner. Fraction Run Cup 4 went live this past Thursday.
It did.
And boy, did it go live. Yeah. Sold out immediately. 30 some odd, almost 40 people on the wait list. Holy cow.
So my fear was, we've put out so many events to sign up for.
Yes.
Because there's just so much to do right off the bat. You're stepping off the bus and school's in session. Right. That's it. Like there's no gap. So I was worried like people are signing up for so many things so early and not even playing them yet. Uh-huh. What's going to happen with our tour series stuff? Are people just going to be sick of signing up for stuff and not playing or what's going to happen? Fraction Run came up and
it was,
how
what?
Many spots
it
are
was,
in that?
2 days or 1 day after Ledgestone going live?
Yeah.
For AMS
also
too?
That. Yes, absolutely.
So
yeah.
we had like a very terrible day to go live. Mm-hmm. What day did Ledgestone go live? Tuesday or Wednesday?
It was earlier that week, but just a couple days. Yeah.
And I was like, oh no. We have two events that are live. People have signed up. There's a ton of people signed up for Dog Bowl and Old Oak. And then Ledgestone hit and we were like,
still.
We had that question answered right away. Mm-hmm. Was that, oh, people are pumped
hungry.
To get the sanctioned season.
What is it,
off
236 or something?
You filled 236 spots plus.
I was actually opening up more spots as people were signing up because I always start off kind of soft.
That's what
and
she said.
Then I get a little harder. And I always leave more room for more spots. You know, I always anticipate that. And it was immediate that I was like, there are already people on the wait list right now. I have to open them up because it's weird. Like this is also, you know, these people that are coming out for disc golf tournaments are still consumers. So I have to think to keep them happy in a way that like, if I let them sit on a wait list, they're going to change their mind. They're going to dip out and I could be creating those spots. So I just had to do that sooner than later.
Yeah.
And you're going to see more events this year. Right. Like you'll probably see a bunch of new events this year. That will end up conflicting with your things because it's
inevitable.
The nature of where we are right now.
Right. Mm-hmm. So already this year has got me, it hasn't even started and it's got me thinking about the changes I need to absolutely make for next year to open up more spots, which is going to make these, either turn these C tiers into B tiers or turn these C tiers into 3 or 4 day C tiers where everybody can play just because they want to play. So the tier of an event has become all that much more like,
well, let's be honest,
less important. They just want to play a tournament. They don't care what the hell it's called.
Dude,
they're B tiers plus with the label of a C tier anyway.
Right. We go hard on it.
You can look at the Birdie Bowl as an example. That was an event that I honestly, I'm so surprised people signed up for. And it ended up filling out.
Mm-hmm.
Difficult conditions to play in and so many names I didn't recognize. The demand is going to be there regardless of when it is, what it is.
Mm-hmm.
People are just hungry for more to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They want competition and they will get it also with the next event I'm going to bring up.
That which is the
Greater Joliet Tour Series Tournament Director Team Challenge.
JGTSTDTC.
I haven't even put this out onto the internet and promoted it in any way and people are still coming into the shop and asking me about it.
Dude.
It's on Disc Golf Scene, but I haven't put it up on Facebook or Instagram. Well, Sheila put it up on Instagram.
Is it? Are signups live
didn't
for
post
that?
It yet. Oh,
no, not
okay.
Yet.
By
not
the
yet.
Time this comes out,
I'd like to play this year.
You should.
That is going to be a ton of fun. That is our match play event where we have a four captains that are picking teams. We're going to have a draft. I don't think we're going to call it a live draft. I think we've decided to not do it as a live video feed, but it is more than likely.
It will be filmed.
All but signed that it will be over at Hell's Gate.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So we will be going back to Hell's Gate in April to do the draft, which is going to be a ton of fun. They're going to have a stage set up for us.
Nice.
Yeah. Kyle over there has like, we told him about it and he's like, oh yeah, we're going to do this and we're going to set the stage.
I think he already has more ideas than we have.
Totally.
So
he loves you guys.
Yeah.
It's going to be a ton of fun. So really excited for that. Last but not least, I'm going to keep this short to just the spring. We have the second stop on the Greater Joliet Tour Series. That is the Workforce Brewing Open 4. That is going to be switched up this year. Traditionally, the last 3 years has been over at, first year we did over at Plainfield. That was a temp course. And then the last two
course,
we did over at Homer Heritage Park over in Homer Glen.
Yep.
This year, because of the demand of weekends, we had to switch some gears and utilize the Clay Track Classic, which we have taken off of the Tour Series.
Right.
For the use of that weekend for the Greater Joliet Tour Series Tournament Director Team Challenge.
Michael Scott.
So Workforce Brewing will be at Trinity Links for this golf course.
For the Cure.
And Workforce definitely deserves to have that at Trinity, if anywhere. So,
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, Doc and Thor have created a great relationship with Brando and Amanda over at Workforce Brewing.
Brando Commando and Amando Commando.
Bramanda.
To have that over, you know, they have happily sponsored Trinity Links, the course, for a few years now. So it's great to bring that event and that name over to Trinity Links. So I'm sure we're going to do a ton of fun stuff.
By the way, congrats to Brandon and Amanda for having twin boys.
Twins. Yeah. No, cutest babies I've seen in a while.
Babies are not cute in general, and these kids are cute.
They were smiling in every photo I've seen so far.
Good for them.
Brando's twins, Basil.
Twins, Basil.
Your comment made my whole day. What did you say?
Brando's House of Awesomeness is now Brando's Home of Awesomeness.
Yeah.
Nice. So good.
That's good.
So good. So good.
I've been dropping some gems on Facebook lately. I know I have.
Yeah. That's your spring edition of the Callahalander Rundown. It's a lot. Mm-hmm. Way more to come. And I'm sure because we're all masochists, we'll do more shit. Yeah. The other cool thing about the Tour Series is that we'll be doing some flex starts coinciding with the layouts from those events on the Thursdays or Fridays before those events.
To practice.
Yeah, so you'll get your practice rounds in, especially over at Trinity that still remains at the moment closed to public through COVID stuff. But it's more important that I like giving them the option for that very cheap $5, $10 sanction round with an ace pot. People are really digging that. Yeah. It's getting a lot of people to sign up for PDGA memberships, which is huge. And they do that one time. They don't play the event, and then they are sure to be signed up for the next one. So I think we're seeing a lot of growth from that, which is awesome.
It's all organic, too. It's not forced. It's just
we're leaving
the natural evolution of the way you guys have been running events.
Yeah, just give them options.
Ooh, we can also tack on to the Callahalander Rundown a sort of secret event. The details are not ready to come out quite yet, but you guys know Ryan Aquino, Disc Golf Digest. He's working on something that is, I think, going to be pretty cool. I don't think it's been done before. I don't want to say too much because he's going to be dropping that announcement soon. So just keep your eyes peeled. I would say follow Disc Golf Digest on Instagram, YouTube, whatever. That's all I can say for now. Follow it. Keep your eye out for the announcement. Mm-hmm. It's something that I haven't seen before and I think is going to be very cool.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
Indeed. Yeah.
So get on that. All right, let's take a quick sponsorship break and we will be right back.
Hey guys, it's Andy O'Day. You know me as AO the Mortgage Pro, your favorite disc golfing mortgage broker. Biggest news to start 2022 is interest rates have gone up. If you are looking to refinance, whether it's to save some money now or maybe pull some equity out of your home to do some debt consolidation or maybe remodel, now is the time to go over those numbers to see what's going to make the most sense for you. If you're looking to purchase, whether now or in the next maybe 18 months, let's develop a game plan so that you can go over the time frames that you need to maybe save some more money for down payment and closing costs, maybe build your credit a little bit, maybe just have no idea how much money you need and what you qualify for if that monthly payment is going to fit in your budget. Let's go over those numbers. Let's develop that game plan so when the time comes, you're going to be ready to go. You guys know how to reach me on all the social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok, AO the Mortgage Pro. And now you can find me on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. We are live now. Episode 0 of Amortize This is live. My partner and I will be talking all things real estate and all things mortgages and how you can leverage those two to really develop and build a financial future for yourself. Again, we're going to have a lot of amazing guests on there, so it should be fun and educational. So please smash that subscribe button and give us a shout. We are live now on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. It's called Amortize This. If you guys mention Unstable Discourse when you call me, you will get a free travel basket after closing so you can keep practice putting in your backyard. Again, AO the Mortgage Pro. You can also find me on aothemortgagepro.com. I look forward to speaking to you guys, and hopefully I'll see you on the course.
Listen to Unstable Discourse on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, or right from unstablediscourse.com. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, or subscribe to our YouTube channel. If you have the time, leave us a rating and review, or just tell a friend. It helps the podcast get to more listeners.
All right. Thank you to our sponsor, AO the Mortgage Pro. Now let's get back to the show. Mm-hmm. It's time for the Bangers and Mash.
Yeah.
That's right. We're fully committed to Bangers and Mash now. Mm. The meat and potatoes are a thing of the past. Right. How do you feel about it, Jason?
It's fantastic. Best thing we've done so far.
I feel like you have to say it with a British accent. Jason, go.
Bangers and Mash. That was horrible.
Torrible.
Terrible.
Alex, so terrible. Go. Bangers horrible. And Mash, British accent.
Horrible.
Don't think about it. Just do it.
Bangers and Mash.
Oh, ooh, I like shit. That. It's saucy.
I can't do that now. I can't follow that. You have that. To. Bangers and Mash.
That's decent.
Bangers and Mash, mate.
I think that's Australian.
Australian. Yeah. That's okay.
That's what came out.
That is what it is. All right, so this is going to be very sort of free flow. I think we don't have a necessary like.
You know tight what the problem is Lauren's filming us.
it's not as tight of an agenda as what we typically have with the Bangers and Mash. We're just going to get caught up on what everybody's been doing and what we're kind of all working on right now. Mm-hmm. I think Hellwood is kind of the big right. That's the big elephant in the room. Let's talk about what's been going on with Hellwood. Last time we talked about it was the bonus episode, and we talked about what to expect. Mm-hmm. Now it's coming toward the end.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what has Hellwood been like.
What it was.
What it is.
What it is, what it was.
What it will be. It's been fantastic. It's sold out every week. Everybody seems to be having such a fantastic time, and half of that always comes from not being able to do anything else or anything else enjoyable outside. Even if you do go and play, it's miserable. So, you know, setting the bar pretty low with just being indoors. But then you go into a haunted house and you know, set up baskets and just everybody's just in such a great mood.
For anybody that hasn't listened to the bonus episode, let's recap real quick what Jason, I know you love to make sure the listener knows exactly what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Actually, you know what?
Yeah.
Jason, tell us what it is.
What is
Jason.
Hellwood?
Yeah, so here's the thing. You guys keep calling it a haunted house. I wouldn't even consider that. That's too umbrella of a term for what is happening over there. It's almost like a haunted experience. It's not just a walk through something. They're telling a story. Each room is unique. There's something to take from every hole that you guys have put in there. It is truly an experience.
It's phenomenal. An 18-hole indoor putting course.
Right.
Yeah.
But you go through the Hell's Gate experience.
The story of the what story they're trying of, to tell.
That they're trying to tell you while you're playing. House. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So the very first room you go into, and what's happening in there?
That's the foyer. So when you're doing the haunted house, you're ushered into this room. Sheila's going to have to hop on the mic and help me a little bit here. But
the story is that there are, twin daughters that are actually Paul Macbeth.
They do look like Paul Macbeth.
I did not know that. I thought you guys had photoshopped his face out of those.
No, they look like Paul Macbeth.
Those are two real women that show up in the Halloween season to play the twins. If you go on their website, you see the whole story. This guy, he lost his twin girls, and then he does a séance to try and communicate with them. Whoa. But he ends up using his blood and their hair and brings them back to life, and they haunt everybody. Ooh. So this is the premise.
So genuinely creepy.
Of the whole haunted house. However, the twins look like Paul Macbeth.
They
so
really
it's
do.
Perfect for us.
Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. So yeah, you go in, you basically sign up, you can put on a card just like you would at any other league. And you and a group of four or five other people go and play this whole 18-hole layout. Every different hole is a different challenge. Like, some of them have very low ceilings, some of them have really narrow gaps you have to get through. Some of the targets are moving. There's there's moving obstacles in front of them. There's random things screaming in your ear right when you're
and there's Mitch DePiro drinking on some of the holes, and you never know.
Arguably the scariest part.
Right. Yeah.
And constantly there's all these different mannequins throughout the place that I no fewer than 10 times thought somebody's standing right next to me while I'm trying to put. It's just a statue. Yeah.
Every time we go in there, somebody will point out, man, that one's creepy. And I'll turn around and I had never seen that one before.
Yeah.
How is that possible?
Yeah. And there are still some guys that get me every time. Mm-hmm. That I'm walking every around single checking time. The course before we start. Yeah. And I'm like, ooh.
And there's all these
hey, I saw you, dog.
There's all these secret doors and hallways. Yeah. Now that some people have been going, weekly, they're learning all the little secret traps. So other disc golfers are popping their head out too to mess with you.
To know that there's that spot there.
I'll tell you what. Yeah. I'm 41 years old. I am what I consider to be a grown man. And at the end of the night, when everybody's gone, and Leo says, hey, some of the lights are still on the baskets. Can you run and turn them off? I have to really convince myself to go back there all by myself and run through and turn the lights off and run back. It's spooky.
That's great.
One of the creepiest things to me about Hellwood is not a scary thing. It's like a kismet thing that, of course, we went there not knowing anything about what it was like. I had gone to the haunted house once. It was like 3 years ago, right?
Yeah.
I had forgotten about what all the rooms looked like.
Sure.
I was there, I was like, oh yeah, I remember this or that.
You just remember being scared.
How perfectly laid out 18 holes fit into this space is the creepiest part about it. Because of course it did. Like, what? It was just like, we got done designing it and we were like, how did we just perfectly fit it? We couldn't put another hole in there.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
We That's really what she couldn't.
Said, but yeah.
So it's just like, to me, looking back is like, man,
it's like Delwood, where it was just waiting for you to uncover it. It was just
like
meant
to be. Like, they were just waiting for us to come with this idea. Yeah. And
Kyle and Audra and them are just so stoked to help
us.
Yeah, every time we show up, they're just ready to go and have everything all set. And
even like to the extent of the room where there's a slide and you guys figured to put the basket at the end and just roll a roller down the slide.
Mandatory roller.
Phenomenal.
Mandatory molar.
Yeah, that was my invention. If anyone wants to host an event there, like for instance, this Tuesday is 2/22/22. There are people
Glenn
getting
Lerner.
Yeah, and yeah. Will. Yeah, they're the lawyers for you.
There are people getting married there on 2/22/22 at 2/22.
You're gonna have to say
on a Tuesday.
2/22/22.
Yeah. So they do host other events. So if you're looking to have like a fun wedding or something unique there, they do this. But you have
bat mitzvahs.
Yeah. You can't be a bridezilla, but they host these unique events inside the haunted house.
I don't think you can do that seems a bar mitzvah and a
do it.
That's like sacrilegious, right?
Right. I don't know.
But yeah, there's ample parking and over 100 people are coming out every week, and
I'm sure they could have kosher hot dogs.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be fine.
Speaking of which, there's good food. I got a burger when I was there, and it was like $5.
Let me talk to you about road burgers.
Oh, the road burgers.
The road burger. At the end of the night when you're done, and then you get that burger to go for the road, it hits.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wish actually I tried to do that on my way out last time, but the only burger that I had left had no cheese on it, so I pulled the ripcord.
I ordered a cheeseburger.
Did they put cheese on it for you?
No, they were out of cheese.
Yeah.
So instead, they gave me nacho cheese to dip that
Newman
in. And let me tell you, I only want that from now on. Dude.
They created a monster.
More cheese than you're ever going to need in each bite.
Mm-hmm.
There's no such thing as more cheese than you're going
to
need.
Right. Correct.
Yeah.
Dip it in cheese and then give me cheese too.
Yeah. So the venue's amazing. The vibe is great. There's like a fire pit outside where people are outside also hanging out.
They have,
out.
Okay, beyond Kyle and Audra, there's like a 10 or 8 person staff maybe every single night that we're there. Like there's just dudes going around that are like making sure all the shit's going off and scaring people. And I'm like, this is to see how much time and effort they are putting.
There's never
in,
a wrapper on the ground or a can miss. Like everything is just taken care of. And it's on how many acres of land?
I know that they have at least another 100 acres they don't even use.
Yeah. So the opportunities for that whole area are just limitless.
We've already talked about pop-up tournaments and the whole deal. And they're just like, yep, let's do it. So, I mean, it's not a matter of if, it's just when. And I'm sure that something will happen this season. It's just a matter of getting beyond the snow and the other things we've got planned without asking for, you know, these guys... poor people to sign up for another tournament before the first one happens. But, you know, I mean, these things are just right there on the other side of the canal.
Jason, did you play when you were there?
I went to just kind of like see the experience. And
it's like the perfect thing for you.
Looking back, I should have.
Yeah.
But any chance you can go to the Flex Start?
Maybe.
Yeah. Maybe. And you know what? The Flex Start.
If I'm going again, it'd be really cool to do that.
If you haven't gone at all, the Flex Start is a great place to go because they turn more of the lights off. They have the fog machines running, so you can't see
that alone.
Halfway down that hallway. Yeah. It is creepy as shit.
Dude.
And they have lots of the crazy lights, the strobes, the sound effects. Oh, man, it's so good.
The butcher room where there's all like slaughtered pigs hanging from chains. Yeah, yeah. Mm. Playing that in the light, I was so happy to play it with the lights on, because when I was there in the dark and all you see is the strobe, like you're getting like 0.1 second flashes of these bloody pigs hanging all. It was like, can we get out of this room immediately, please? Or the room that's like all stuffed animals and like baby dolls.
Oh, it's
like,
terrible.
That's the scariest room in the place to me.
Yeah, I hate that room. Yeah. Mm.
But yeah, even if you don't, I know the people listen to the show that don't disc golf. If you're one of those people, this is such a cool way to like kind of tap into the community. Like,
yeah,
this is not for disc golfers. This is for anybody who wants to do something fun.
The skill required to putt in the putting league, it's still tough to make those putts, but the energy and the skill required isn't so high that you should be discouraged. It's easy enough that anybody can do it.
It's just like putt-putt. It's like the...
So, yeah.
It's what disc golf putt-putt should be.
You get you get three
putts per station.
Per station, right?
Yep.
That's it.
And then they're all within 30 feet.
Yeah. And you either made one, two, or three of them.
Right.
That's right.
And that's your point.
So in the last 2 weeks, we've actually picked two holes that have been double points.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
love that.
Too. Nice. So it just turns up the heat.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't done it, this is going to drop one day before your last chance for the year.
For
the flex start.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Do it. Tell your friends about it. Get more people to check it out. This is good for the community.
Come on out. Yeah.
Moving on from Hellwood, let's talk about the Disc Golf Chicago event that just happened. That's the Birdie Bowl. Bowl. That event actually happened because we wanted to do a little fundraiser coming into this year. We had pretty much nothing in the bank. And we had all these discs from Discmania. We're like, we have everything we need for players packs. Let's give people something fun to do and come up with just a unique format. I actually started with like the logo and like the name of the event. And then I figured out everything else afterwards. With the Southside Glide, the logo was the Falcon, which is like the Chicago bird. And so I was like, how can I incorporate another bird into this event? And I was like, it's a winter event. What about a penguin? And then I was like, it's going to be cold, Birdie Bowl. Let's make an event that's all about birdies. So we'll like take bogeys out of the equation. Or you're either going to get an ace, a birdie, or a par. If you don't get your par, you just pick your disc up. There's nothing else after that. So you either get 1 point for your par, 3 points for your birdie, or 5-4 an ace. And I expected, we played all shorts at Mokena, 27 holes. No hole was over 300 feet. Most of them were like between 150 and like 280. So I expected to see a couple of aces. There was 108 people out there and only one was hit on the day. There were a lot of chain outs that people were upset about.
Mm-hmm.
It was stupidly cold. I was very nervous.
And there had been a lot of snow previous to that.
Right.
So that was tough.
Just a few days, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was crazy enough to think, oh, well, we'll have people play two rounds. You know, we'll get through two rounds of 27 in one day when we barely have any sunlight and people play really slow in the snow. So that was just a big misstep. And then thank God we got hammered by a bunch of snow the week before. There's no way people are going to be able to play through this twice in a day. So let's bring it back to one round. And instead of asking people to play a second round, we'll do some games, which worked out really well. People played their 27 holes. The sun came out. The pads were totally fine. Thank God to Circle One. Let me do a quick local route shout out to a few people. Mikey Vizd, Anthony Guzzo, Nick O'Reilly, Dan Blazer. I might be missing a name or two, but I know just the Circle One
crew. If it's Rokita, don't worry about it.
I think Rokita's on the list.
Nah, it's okay.
Boots and jeans.
Those dudes knew that we were in trouble coming into that event, and they were out there every day that week, sweeping pads, shoveling out pads. Like, the only reason that course was playable that day is because those guys looked out for us.
Mm-hmm.
So huge thank you to those Circle One guys. They really made the event work. Temperature was fine at the start of the day. People were very nervous about like, how are we going to actually get through this day? Especially some of the girl players talking to each other like, I don't know if we're going to make it all day. This is too much. But yeah, it warmed up. People had a great time. The games worked out really well. We did a CTP throw off to the practice basket from like the field.
Mm-hmm.
And the entire field was an ice sheet because it all melted and then got really cold. So everybody was doing their CTP throw off and the discs were skipping off the ice. So you're just watching everybody try and play these big skips.
Oh, it was like curling. You just have to like skate it up to the... cool.
Legitimately, I think people were like trying to lay it down low and just slide all the way to the basket. So it was fun to watch, 100 people try and take that shot.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, we did a Ring of Fire, which is a putting game where everybody stands in a big circle around the basket. You take your shot. If you make it, you advance and the circle gets smaller and smaller until it's only one person that made the putt.
I saw it on Instagram.
Looked pretty cool, right?
Yeah, it turned out good.
Yeah. As far as an event that's unsanctioned goes, that's really just about having fun, it played out perfectly.
I like the point structure. It's like a birdie bash, whatever. What the Vibram had a birdie bash and all those, but the point structure was only if you got birdies. Like there were, it was very low scoring.
Yeah,
but the point structure that you had, I think, was more fair and it seemed a lot more fun.
I hope so. Yeah, I think people had a really good time. All the feedback we got has been very positive. Brand new players who had never done a tournament before were like, thank you, this was so cool, I can't wait to do more.
That's another one where like the pressure's kind of off.
Totally. I was crazy enough to say, yeah, card requests are fine. So everybody sent me a card request.
Oh, yeah.
Which was a little tedious to figure out, but in the end was the right thing, because if it's just an event for fun, playing with your friends makes all the difference in
what's
the world.
That like? We don't know what that's like.
I don't know. I have no idea.
Sheila.
But yeah, I was excited to see Dana Vici. He got in last minute. He actually took down first place for uppers. Who else? We had Sam Dulusky. She took down first place for women's uppers.
Yeah, good for her.
I was happy for the women's turnout in general. Like, I think we had 16-ish out of, 108.
Awesome.
Yeah, I was really happy with that.
And speaking of that, for Hellwood, the women's turnout has been phenomenal. Like an average 20 of 20 plus every week.
That's so great. 30,
out of 120?
29 or 30 one week?
Dude. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Totally. Ooh, shout out to Sammy's Links and Drinks, who also saved my ass at that event. I told people originally we were going to do walking tacos, and I was like, oh, I'll just make food in advance of the event. And I always try to do too much. And then thank God Sammy's was available and was down to help. They showed up, served hot dogs, beef, drinks, chips, like everything people needed, and hot chocolate, which they donated. So everybody got free hot chocolate all day.
Of course.
They just hooked it up. They really took the event to another level and took all the stress off of us. We just had to focus on, getting people their scores and doing the trophies and payouts and very,
by
very
the way,
easy.
The trophies were amazing as well. Great job.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because I felt very dirty not asking you to do the trophies, but I also was like, maybe he'll appreciate me not asking him to do something for me.
I don't mind a bit, especially if they're different. If it's something that we don't see, they looked really good.
They were heavy.
Yeah, they looked heavy.
Glass?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everything just worked out well. Oh, the players pack too. The hats. Big hit.
Yeah, those hats were great.
Love those hats.
I didn't when we had talked about hats, the supply of any hat is so shit right now that I didn't know if we were going to be able to get anything. But then I saw these beanies and they were Sherpa lined and I was like, I don't know about that, man.
Dude, it was very needed. Like that day was so cold.
They're great.
People ditched the hats they brought and put that on right away.
Yeah.
And then last thing I'll shout out is Disc Mania, who came through with us, making custom discs for us, pretty much last minute. They turned it around. The design looked really great. Thanks again, Dana and Disc Mania. I mean, I can't say enough about how lucky we were that the event ran so smoothly. And of course, I'd like to do it again next year. It's just, I don't know that we're going to get that lucky again. At that time of year, the weather could change everything.
Right?
Mm-hmm. If it didn't get warm, it could have still been a ton of snow on the ground and been very difficult to play.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it just stayed really icy, like, is anybody going to break their ass out here? And is a lawsuit in the cards? Because I think it might be. Shout out to everybody who helped run that. That's... Mm-hmm. Andy O'Day, AO the Mortgage Pro, was at Tournament Central with me all day. And then, of course, Eric, Kevin, Tyler, Max, Matt Swing, all those guys who show up and make sure all the events go smooth.
So the regulars.
The boys, yeah.
Thank you to
all those guys.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, cool. That's pretty much a wrap on the Birdie Bowl.
Awesome.
Yeah. All right. We've gone through a little bit of Delwood, what you guys have been up to, what Disc Golf Chicago has been up to. Jason, what in the world have you been up to?
There is a show that I am in love with because of who's on it.
It's the greatest
show ever. It is. So I like this stuff because I could see myself getting into the world of improv comedy. I've always been a huge fan of improv comedy.
Oh, I would love to watch that.
People have, ever since I was a kid, have been like, you should be a comedian, you should be a comedian. But the idea of getting up on stage and telling the same joke over and over again is gross to me. But improv comedy...
Buttholes, am I right, guys?
Right, yeah. It's weird.
What's the deal with buttholes?
But like...
What's up with buttholes? Yeah.
Getting up on stage and not knowing what the night is going to be and it being something fun and interesting every night, like...
Yeah.
I can get down on some improv comedy.
That makes me so uncomfortable to watch people do that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I mean, it can go one of two ways. Super cringy and embarrassing. Yeah. It could be like, these guys are brilliant.
The most popular example, yeah. You know, Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Right, right.
When it goes right, it is the best. But when it goes wrong, you're like,
it's tough to watch.
Yeah, so.
So there is a semi-scripted, semi-improv show that's on Netflix right now that stars one of my most favorite people in the whole wide world. Will Arnett. It's called Murderville.
Oh, nice. I've been waiting for someone to tell me about it. Phenomenal.
It's so good. So, have any of you watched it?
I've heard of it. I haven't watched it yet.
Sheila and I have watched 3 or 4 episodes.
I'm 4 episodes in. I might have watched the 5th so far. So, it is like The Office. It's an American version of a UK show.
A better version of it,
right? What it is Will plays a detective who is investigating a murder each episode. Okay.
Okay.
And in each episode, his partner is a celebrity. And the celebrity does not have a script.
Oh, cool.
The celebrity's job is to figure out who done it, right? So there's 3 beats to the show. Call it 5 beats to the show. There's the intro. Then they interview 3 potential suspects.
Local route.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then
The bangers and mash.
And then the last one is they have to see if they figured out who done it based off of the clues that they were given at the murder scene.
Okay. There's been a murder.
Fantastic. Yeah. Conan O'Brien, Annie, what is her name from Schitt's Creek? I can't think of all the celebrities that are on it, but it's so well done and well crafted. And I know that
there was an NFL player.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the guy that's doing all the billboards in Chicago right now. Marshawn Lynch. Yeah.
I got there, Sheila. Yeah,
nice.
Marshawn Lynch, I got it.
But the fact that see, the thing is when I say that Will has a script, they just have a loose idea of how everything's going to go.
Uh-huh.
They don't know what the celebrity is going to bring to the table as far as the dialogue is concerned. So once you bring that person in, then it's all like improv comedy to kind of get through this process.
So great.
But then keep it in line to make sure that they pick up on this little minor detail that is going to come up later because it's part of why that person was the murderer.
Them not picking up on becomes funnier when they don't.
You
don't want them to. You want them to be...
As the viewer, you're like, struggling. Oh, you see something in the background. You're like, oh, it's them because of that. But if they miss it and then they don't, it just gets better.
Once you've gotten a couple episodes through, you realize the whole formula. Yeah. It's funny to watch them struggle. It's funny the scenes where they were making Conan eat all the hot food and the hot sauce.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And then still carrying on and staying in character while he's struggling to not have a mouth on fire and not break his character, which the levels deep that it goes is pretty impressive. It's like if The Office was also an escape room.
Wow.
It feels like a television show that you're watching someone do an escape room.
Yeah, but very fun.
They're funny and it's scripted. The other thing I thought was kind of strange, and it wasn't really, I mean, I guess it was probably explained, but every episode starts the same.
Right.
It's the same scene, literally, and then they introduce the guest.
Right, right.
And then they come in. So after
there's a bit of a story, it's
literally
also not
the same thing. And that's funny, too, that they do the same thing every time.
Oh, I'm really intrigued to check that out.
Yeah, I think I will as well.
I mean, when I was watching it earlier today, I looked at Will Arnett on the screen. I was like, this dude is becoming one of my favorite human beings on the planet.
He is a solid human.
There is just something
what if
about him.
Will Arnett and Paul Rudd
were
in the same room together.
Oh, my God.
B's and C's.
Yeah, speaking of that,
we went to a live taping, Sheila and I. And our friends Nick and Nikki went to see a live taping of Smartless at Chicago Theater with Mark Cuban was the guest. We did not know who was going to be the guest, just as you don't know who's going to be the guest, or the 2 other hosts don't know who's going to be the guest. Is tons of fun.
You have any idea of who it could be, or were you just like, whoever it is going
to
be great?
We were sitting there, so we went out to eat, and we're talking about like, oh, who could it possibly be? Right. Like, who would fit Chicago, you know, Bill Murray was mentioned as we were talking about it. Like that would be nuts. Or like John C. Reilly.
Yeah.
That'd be another one. Of course, we talked about Jordan a little bit, but like that's, yeah. I mean, we're like trying to figure out who it could be.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Ended up being Mark Cuban, and it was really cool. I think most people know enough about him. The takeaway that I had from Mark Cuban was completely different. I feel completely different about him now because I was like, oh, this dude is just a hustler. I mean, so many dropped the whole time. Just a real normal feeling dude that just also happens to be a billionaire because he worked his ass off.
That's awesome.
Really cool. Just, and I love the show. And it just,
knowing that we're going to do another live episode this season, did you guys take anything away from, okay, that's a very high end podcast, Chicago Theater. Like this is, you know, probably one of the more popular shows and bigger live podcasts that maybe has happened in podcast history. I'm just guessing. Yeah. Is there anything that you guys felt like, oh, when we do our live episode next, we should do X like that? Or was there any inspiration?
Couches. You should be sitting on couches.
Oh,
I like that.
Cool.
But
I like a good couch.
I feel like the Paul Macbeth episode was longer than the live episode.
I was going to say, it went pretty quick.
Theirs was like an hour or less.
Bing, bada, boom. Like, yeah. They started out backstage and it was kind of like a little bit of banter. And then they come running out and it's like, hey, and everybody's like, wee. Yeah. You know, and then Cuban comes out, they do the whole episode and then Cuban dipped as they do on the episodes, you know, the, you know, then they still have banter afterwards. And then their whole thing is like, how can they do bye? You know,
if you
listen to Smart, that's the whole ender. They did that and they just jogged off stage and it was like, oh yeah, this was not a concert where there's going to be an encore where you're like, no man, hang out. They're coming back. No, they were gone. We left.
Well, that's,
so it was like,
that was similar quick to ours when we, the episode, whole episode took maybe an hour and a half tops, I think. Yeah. And then as soon as the show was done, it was like, everybody get out. Well, let's put this all down. Yeah. Like, take it all down.
Yeah, but we weren't sitting on couches, man.
Yeah, we should have gotten a hold of Will Arnett and said, hey.
Also, we're not Will Arnett, Jason Bateman, or Sean.
Yeah, or
right,
I mean,
right.
Yeah.
Speaking of podcasts, there's only 8 episodes up because it just started, but I've listened to 2 and I'm loving it. David Spade and Dana Carvey are doing a podcast together right now called Fly on the Wall.
Oh, man.
And it is recapping what it's like to be backstage at SNL.
SNL.
And Chris Rock and Rob Lowe and like all these people that are like the people you want to know, like as guests.
Oh, guests on the show?
Yeah.
Oh, get out of town.
Yeah.
That
the
awesome.
First episode is the two of them with Chris Rock. Second one is Rob Lowe. These are the guys you want to be telling the stories that they're telling if you like SNL. The beginning of the second episode, right before they bring Rob Lowe on, David tells a story about him and Farley getting into a fight over who was going to hang out with Rob Lowe on set of Tommy Boy More. And like just it brought like tears to my eyes a little bit. The fact that those movies are so important to me, their time on SNL is comedy gold to me and the movies they were cranking out at the time. So to hear them talk about that backstage stuff, it was just giving me goosebumps. I absolutely loved it.
Is there anything else that we, you know, really should catch people up on?
We can talk about the disc golf dream I had last night.
Yes.
I had a disc golf related dream last night and it's still a little hazy. I should have wrote down the details this morning, but essentially.
Am I going to have to cut a lot of this out?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
It feels like there's going to be a too far T punchline.
Yeah. Here we go.
There's buttholes in this for sure.
But every time you talk, it still feels like.
I know. So I had a dream that you had set up a tournament that I was there vending for, but by vending, I was pulling a wagon behind me, but by wagon, it was like a piece of plywood on wheels. So it was like 3 foot by 5 foot, and I had drinks on it that were just like all like wobbly on the plywood,
with the ice and
but I was like pulling it behind me, and you told me that there was like a grass line that you had mowed and you were like, just stay in the grass, just stay where I mowed and just go up to people and sell them drinks. And I was like, all right, cool. I can do that. So I'm pulling this wagon behind me down this like grassy part. And I start walking and there's like that good looking dude that's part of Circle One. He was here.
Guzzo.
Yes, Anthony.
Was Guzzo here for that?
Anyway.
Good beard. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think
one
it was
One Deli.
Yes, it was Guzzo.
I did
yes,
the speech.
Yes. It was him. Now it's coming back to me. he threw and it made like a wild curve in the air and started coming towards me. And you guys were yelling like, look out, look out.
And that sounds like Guzzo with the Aaron
throw. So like, and I turned to hear you guys. And as I'm turning, I see it out of the corner of my eye and I flinch. And the disc lands right in between my shoulder and my head as I flinch. And then I woke up. That was a disc golf dream that like the disc with a shoom, poop, and I caught it.
So what's right the analysis?
What I caught it right there.
What's
and
your
then
subconscious
I woke up.
Trying to tell you?
Yeah, I don't know on that one. That's why I wanted to let you guys know.
I think Lauren could help us get to the bottom of this one. The clairvoyancy is a big part of dream interpretation, no?
You better watch your ass.
Yeah, okay. All right. She wow. said, you're not welcome in the disc golf community.
Yeah, right?
That's what
yeah.
that means.
Yeah. A big theory in dream interpretation is that you are just practicing right. for real life scenarios.
Simulation.
Yeah. Yeah, your mind is just going through scenarios that it can hope to relive. And mm-hmm. if those situations arise, you now know mm-hmm. a little bit better about how to react.
Yeah.
Okay. And so
okay. it's about the anticipation of mm-hmm. you wanting to also still be at Delwood Disc Golf this right. summer, helping right. out and right. all the yeah. things that we do.
Yeah.
That might entail you dragging drinks on a piece of plywood.
A piece of plywood behind
but
me.
But yeah. that you're worried about getting in the way.
Oh.
Oh, oh. Right?
Oh.
Yeah, because I kind of did in the dream.
Both figuratively and literally.
Oh.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah. I like that.
You can cut it or not, but that was.
No, no, no. I'm trying
that was my disc golf dream.
I think there should be a Jason's dream segment on every episode.
When I was a child, I dreamed. Jimothy?
Dreamed.
Can I call you Jim?
I dreamed.
I dreamed almost every night. Uh-huh. I maybe remember my dreams once a year now. Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm the same way. Not often. Not often.
Fascinating.
Yeah. Not
but
often.
It just so happened to be last night.
Speaking of vending at tournaments, I won't mention names because it doesn't matter who it was. A person reached out to us and asked if they could vend at one of our tournaments as a disc dyer. Uh-huh. And peddle their disc dyeing wares. And it got me thinking, and I've seen more and more posts about disc dyeing lately. And I don't know if every disc golfer has tried it or, yes. but I would guess we've all sat in
have you done
my
it?
Basement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've
and,
done it. I've yeah, done it.
And we've tried it.
She's
and we've done,
it. You done
wow.
It?
This is
Lauren
cool.
Lauren Lakeberg.
Lauren hasn't tried it. She was too busy doing cool shit.
Right.
Yeah. It takes too long, and the effort required is, to me, just too great for what we had turned out. Mm-hmm. Now, the level of disc dyeing has grown exponentially, and some of these right. disc dyeing people have surpassed any expectation of what I thought could be on a disc.
Yeah, some of these I thought that it was pretty random. You put your dye on the disc, and sure. you're just like, whatever comes out is going to be cool, right?
Yeah. Clearly, here's some shaving cream. Here's some shit. Throw it together. See what happens.
Clearly, there are people who have figured out how to get exactly Absolutely. What they want to see. And some of it is amazing.
Yeah.
Work.
So my query is not with why to do it or how to do it, but why to make a business out of it. As a small business owner, and I am just my own sample, I guess, there is a cost basis that I have to endure, and I have to have a profit of a fairly large amount to continue what I'm doing, right? And then on top of that, to make money and a living doing what I'm doing. So I know what my numbers are and what I have to hit. And if I don't do that, then I don't have anything if I don't have that, right?
Sure.
And I know a lot of guys are doing this just for fun. And they're not doing it to make money. But you can't disc dye and spend all of the money that you're doing it and not at least get a small return back so that you can continue having fun doing it.
Yeah.
But I'm seeing tons and tons and tons of disc dyers, this guy included, that was asking to vend at the tournament. They can't possibly be making money once the time and materials have been calculated to continue doing what they're doing. And I am just, it's blowing my mind to see how many people are doing it, what little profits could possibly be made from it, knowing what it takes. I just don't see the business model making sense. Yeah.
There's a lot of people doing it. And there were a lot of people doing it 10 years ago to scale to the amount of disc golfers there were 10 years ago.
Sure, sure, sure.
Now, because that number has exploded, now we are seeing, and this is like the crack up for me. Like, I love all these guys, but I just feel like every person that does disc dyes acts as if it's never been seen before. Mm-hmm. So being somebody that's in disc golf, that is a thing that's very eye rolling to me. Like,
I mean,
just
don't they have to? Don't they have to? That's like, scarves or shirts, yeah. or I mean, if you're mm-hmm. if you're out there selling whatever you're
if
selling,
you saw you, the number you have of to approach it with that attitude. I saw doing it, you'd understand why I feel the way that
I think this calls for an episode of Judge Jason. So, Judge Jason, if it please the court,
Your Honor,
you may approach the bench.
Thank you. Uh-huh. When we're done with our discussion, I would really love your ruling on whether or not we are on crack for thinking what we're thinking about the disc dyeing genre.
Okay.
So to continue.
Is there going to be a plaintiff and a defendant?
No, I don't think so. I think this is more like Supreme Court. Like, I am just pleading my case to the judge at this point.
Okay. Sheila raised her hand. Are you wanting to be a plaintiff or a defendant?
This is what I have to say. In anything, I don't care if it's disc dyeing or making t-shirts for ping pong. I think there's companies popping up everywhere, including Amazon, that are just making money off of your hobby. So if you like someone that dyes discs and they are giving back to your community, by all means, support their art, support what they're doing. But if you don't know who is selling these exact things, and it's just because it's disc golf, there's always going to be companies popping up out of nowhere that are like, they're no name, but they know that they can make money off of what you like.
There's no soul in it.
Exactly. Yeah. So I say support the people that are supporting your hobbies. If a disc dyer is giving back to your own community and doing leagues or just giving back in some sort of way, awesome. But if they're there strictly for a profit, I'm against it.
Mm. Okay.
That's my...
I like that take.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of feel the same way, but I guess my beef... if we're going to bring beef back to Judge Jason, is not really with the process of disc dyeing or that people want to dye discs. I appreciate it. I think they're cool. I'll buy them. I've bought how many last year? The fact that people are making it a business model that they are trying to make a living from is what is blowing my mind. I spoke with
Tiffany Shaw.
Yeah, I spoke with Tiffany Shaw over at Hellwood on Friday to kind of confirm my suspicions. And she kind of told me what I had thought was the case. Most of these guys are doing it as a hobby, and I really appreciate that. I want people to have a hobby like that where they can pour their time and their efforts and their talent into and really appreciate what they're doing and be proud of what they're doing and maybe make a dollar or two back so that they can continue to do it.
Yeah.
And I strive to support that. But the few that are trying to make a living
to a point where they're willing to reach out to a tournament director a couple states away to drive and the money that it costs to get there. And
sure. Like, I mean, I've seen in the last couple of weeks, disc dyers travel across the country to go set up a booth. And one thing I talked with Tiffany Shaw about was the time that it takes to dye a disc. And what we boiled it down to was a very simple, quick dye. When everything is said and done, probably 20 to 25 minutes a disc. Mm-hmm. So let's call it 20 minutes. So you get 3 discs an hour. If you are trying to make a living at this point in this day and age, you got to make $50-$55 an hour as a, you know, sole proprietor of a business.
Yeah.
So you're making, you know, how many dollars on each disc once you factor in all that time? And then there's the materials and the dyes, and I know they're inexpensive. You know, that makes sense to me. But when you factor all of that in, and then the travel time to do it, and then setting up a booth, and these discs, you're not talking to Latitude 64 and getting 10,000 blank white discs. You're going to places like Delwood Disc Golf, and you're going to these retailers online, and maybe you're getting a discount. It's not a wholesale discount, right? Mm-hmm. Which is what would only make sense to me to make a profit. So when you factor all of that in, are you making a dollar, two, three a disc? You know, are you thinking you're making more because you're not factoring in your time?
Right.
I'm making $15 a disc. No, you're not.
Right. Yeah. Right.
How much mileage? You know, how much time did it take? Right. How much in packaging?
Cost of materials.
Yeah. Cost of materials, shipping, all of these things.
They want to turn a blind eye to all of that and just think about the $15.
And it makes... Yeah. Okay, I spent $15 on this disc and I spent half an hour, 40 minutes because I'm new at this and I fucked up a couple and whatever. So now I have to sell these at $40 a disc to make enough money to buy more discs to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it ends, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to sell this disc so I can do it again. I guess that's still kind of a side hustle, but I guess that's okay. Like, hey, Alex, you want to buy this disc for me?
No.
You say yes. Okay. He buys the disc so that I can buy another disc and I can do it. And that's, I don't see it progressing like a lot of things would have to progress, especially with a sport that is so relatively small, like disc golf still, right. Even though it's growing exponentially, it's still small.
It's just always, it's irritating for me to always watch every little thing get attempted to be monetized.
Sure.
Right. Let it be a hobby. Let it be a fun thing, but inevitably it's just scooped up and monetized, and that becomes like, yeah. I don't know, barfy to me. I've seen it. It's, zipper pulls. I mean, our very close buddy Donnie Longton did zipper grips. Like,
I'm going to be the defendant and go ahead. I want to support the other side here. First, and this is a very small point, it's not really a cog in my case, but Salt Bae comes to mind for me. I don't think what he's cooking is that different to any other chef, but just because he freaking drizzles the salt off his arm in a certain way, and like the way he cuts the meat is always like, people are buying his presentation more than anything. And it's not to say that you couldn't make a name for yourself dying discs in a very entertaining way. Like if you were recording the process you were doing and you were doing it in a way that nobody else was, you could get a following going for it. You could make some money from it.
I think there's an
added
value.
And you're selling yourself. Correct. The disc is a byproduct of it. So
it's immediately copycatted, though. Like, yeah. Immediately. Of course. Like, you buy a dyed disc and go, dude, I could do this. Like, and then everybody does it.
Now let me get to the actual, like, my case is that I don't think most people in the disc dyeing community are doing it to make money. I think there are some people who are misled or misunderstand the potential of doing it. And I think most people are coming from a place of something that's very understandable to me, which is if I could find a way to tie what I love to a way to make money, then I could be happy. Mm. And I think a lot of people have jobs that they hate and that they're miserable. And the opportunity to maybe find a way out of that and to make some money doing something they like to do is so hard to deny that some people get blinded by the opportunity. Mm-hmm. And then I think that the more people who are doing it just because it makes them happy and they're not really seeing this as a business opportunity, they just love doing it and they love being to contribute something to the community. Like, hey, this is from me. Like, I came up with this idea and this is me leaving my fingerprints on the culture and the community. No, I'm not going to make any real money from it, but I like to do it. It makes me happy. I think there's no reason to discourage that at all.
No, I would agree with
that's
that.
That's a really good thing for people to do. At the end of the day, there's like, nobody's really making money in disc golf. I mean, there's a very small amount of people who are actually have made a career out of it and like they're unicorns at this stage. Maybe someday down the line, more people will be able to actually make money from disc golf. But as of now, it's not really there. And mostly what we see is just people doing it for the love of the game. And I don't think there's any reason to discourage people from doing it. But I do agree with you that there are some people who are
a lot misguided. A lot of the things that we're talking about are so easily accessible to try. And then the inevitability of them trying it is the immediate, I can do this and sell it. And there are so many people doing it.
Yeah.
So it's
And the dyes are brighter and the discs are cooler and everything's getting better.
Right.
You know, it's like video games. We're talking about, we're playing Nintendo and now we're playing PS4,
sure.
You know, when it comes to the quality of the disc dyes, but the motivation remains the same. I guess if you're doing it with the hopes that you make a little bit of money to continue to do it, please do that. But when you have a backstock of thousands of discs, which is the case with some people, thousands, to continue to dye them and sell them in order to try and make a living, man, I wish you well, but I just don't see a 401k being accrued from dyeing discs. I just don't, you know?
This really bums me out because I think it really is born from getting excited by the idea of if I just grind or if I just find a thing I can do on the side that maybe I can not have a miserable relationship with what I do for money.
I hope that's not what it is.
I think,
but maybe hope that it's not what it is. And my God, if it's that bad, maybe disc dyeing isn't going to fix it. Like,
yeah,
I don't know.
You know what I mean?
Even if they're not pursuing it because that's their ticket out. Like if they're just doing it for their mental health as a hobby and it funds their ability to continue doing that hobby.
Well, we talk about disc golf in general as a hobby. Like people come in and buy discs they don't need all damn day. And that is your business mm-hmm. model. That is right. what you do is you sure. sell discs.
Right.
Mostly to people that have too many in the first place.
Right.
That continue to buy them. So I guess mm-hmm. we're in the same boat when it comes to that.
Do you remember when I first reached out to you, you were doing Clash and I wanted to get involved with sponsorships.
Mm-hmm.
So that was born from a, I'm never going to be a great disc golfer, but what I do for money is I sell sponsorships / advertising. And what I really love is disc golf. Can I find a way to marry those two things mm-hmm. together?
Sure.
I never thought I'll make money selling sponsorships and disc golf, but I can at least contribute something that I know I'm decent at and something I care about. Let me find a way to intersect those
yeah.
two.
I hope that that's where the motivation comes for most people. And again, so. Like,
but we know there's some dummies out there who got yeah. it wrong yeah. for sure.
Yeah, yeah, Lauren Lakeberg is raising her hand because that is her motivation. I've been yeah, doing yeah, it from here. Yeah. So and you've made millions doing it.
From here, and I've made millions of dollars.
Yeah, millions.
Yeah.
But and I don't want to miss. I don't want people to misunderstand. Like, I hope everyone is successful doing it. I don't knock it at all. I think it's awesome. Right, and right. I think everyone that's doing it is talented in their own way. And I've seen nothing but really good stuff. But I just don't see it being a sustainable business practice. And I don't want to see people fail trying to do something that is just not going
to
work.
You can play your guitar. You don't have to be in a band touring.
What if I...
You can dye discs.
Disc golf songs, and then I sold the CDs.
Wait.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Write that down.
If I was seeing a lot of talent hit the feed of my disc golf content, I'd probably feel a lot differently. But what I'm seeing is that someone saw someone else do something and they're doing the same thing with the same materials, the same way, with the same colors.
I'm trying to act like yeah. they've there's
oh
better.
My yeah. god. No, yeah. man, it's Worm Dip on another essence. We've seen one. 10 of them last week.
It's a little uncomfortable to talk about because we have it people is. That we know
yeah,
that are really good at it yeah. and really passionate.
When I talked to Tiffany Shaw, I did mention to her that we want her on the podcast.
I would
and
love
partly
yeah, we gotta do
to
that.
To talk about this specific subject because she is an incredibly talented disc dyer, but she has also admitted to us that she has spent weeks dyeing a disc.
A disc.
A single disc. And I'm not talking.
And I've seen that work and yeah. it is Monet's.
Yeah.
It's
and I'm not talking full time, but there's hours and tens and 20s and 30s and 40s of hours into these discs.
Wow.
And I can guarantee goddamn to you, she is not charging $2,500 for that disc,
right.
which
right.
it should be based on
at
the
best,
yeah, hours
of work.
You can
sell it for 50 right? to 100 bucks and that's not worth
you can't.
But it's
so right. she is incredibly talented and I would really love to hear more
when
of
she
her
was at
take.
One of the last disc swap, I think she
yeah, at Workforce.
She had like a sign to do custom. That was a thing, right? She
yeah.
had a sign that was like to do custom, like very specific. You
yes.
want, you know, this thing
yeah.
and, you
on
know,
this disc.
Do,
and, yeah.
yeah. Uh-huh. So that was pretty cool. I yeah. like that. That's, I guess.
I want to mention just real quick that Devin Hernandez, who I mentioned earlier in the show, uh-huh. he went to the school.
Uh-huh.
He is a really talented dyer and he
mm-hmm.
does great work with Glow.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm ever going to buy a custom dyed disc, it's going to be because it's from somebody that I respect and I like their work. And I'm more than happy to pay somebody mm-hmm. like Devin for his work.
Mm-hmm.
But really what I get from seeing his, like when he, once he puts his fingerprints on it, it's like, now that's a Devin piece of art. And mm-hmm. I know nobody else is going to have that. I do want that. I am willing to pay more to have that.
Yeah. There's got
to
be an attachment value.
There's it's an yeah. attachment because uh-huh. I know he's
no,
cool. And I know where this came from. Just him
right.
loving
and
to
not
do
just
it.
Like, whoa, this one's got pink swirls. Cool.
If I showed up to a booth and I didn't know Devin and he just had a bunch of dyes, uh-huh. I'd be like, those are super dope. Am I going to buy one? I'm not sure. But since I know him mm-hmm. and I respect him and I like what he's all about, mm-hmm. I do want his art. Mm-hmm. I do want to like be the only one that has that thing. And if you haven't seen his stuff, you should check. I mean, he's very talented.
Mm-hmm.
I think his username on Instagram is Devin Hernandez.
Oh, clever. So, Jason, hearing all of that,
mm-hmm.
Your Honor,
mm-hmm.
Judge, Jason, what is your take on this situation? What is your ruling?
I declare that disc dying is just that. It is dead. Find a way to make some money somewhere else and just let it be art and stop trying to make everything a goddamn side hustle. Court adjourned.
That's brilliant. Yeah, you as a sassy southern judge. Yeah.
Yeah.
We need more of that.
We need to give you a gavel so we can. Yep. Ruling.
That's it. That's it. The ruling.
And if anyone says anything else, he'll hold you in contempt of court.
Completely. And my arms are big. I can hold
Who's
them.
Your bailiff?
Lauren Lakeberg.
I was going to say, is it right? Lauren or Sheila?
Yeah. Yeah. Lauren.
Lauren's going to walk me out.
Sheila's the type lady.
The
stenographer.
Stenographer. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
Well, that was a cool first session of Judge Jason B. Yeah. Be sure to catch more of those as the season progresses.
It's a little beefy, I'll say. It's a little beefy.
I think it has to be. There has to be an argument to be had. Hopefully, eventually, we will get two sides to the story, but I think we're all in agreement at this point.
No disrespect.
No.
Absolutely.
Please
no
disrespect.
Please,
please don't take it the wrong way.
But let's move along. I really wanted to talk a little bit while we're here about the UDisc article that came out that talked a lot about some of the like crazy stats from this year.
Mm-hmm.
So cool that we have that resource just going on. Yeah. Like everybody.
And if you're not familiar with it, you can check out the Delwood Disc Golf article talking about the UDisc article.
Oh, yeah.
That was expertly written.
By who?
Oh, we got the hair flip by Miss Sheila Callahan.
She.
Wow.
But it's a great article about the article, but the article is actually great as well. So, yeah.
And if you follow my Facebook, I'm going to write a small article about Sheila's article, which was about the article. So
right.
Ooh.
That'll be exciting. Look for that.
And then I'll record a reaction video to Jason's article.
Please.
About the article. About
that is, by sidebar, that is TikTok to me. That is all I see on TikTok is people just recreating other people's content and then being famous for that recreation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then people reacting to that and then being famous because they reacted to it.
Yeah.
And I just want to break my phone in half.
Yeah.
But I digest.
I digest.
Disc Golf Digest. It's taken.
Basically, this is an article that just kind of recaps the main like eye-popping stats from this year. And there have been a lot of big stats since 2020 when disc golf really started to pick up tons of steam. But the one that we were just talking about before we started recording was 5.28 new courses a day were installed in 2021.
Which I still can't wrap my head around. It just doesn't compute.
We sat here and tried to kind of figure out like, what does that really
worldwide,
mean?
Worldwide,
like, 1,500 new courses were installed
and
in
I'm
going to
guess a lot of the United States, a lot of the Netherlands, you know,
one
Western and Central Europe, Mexico.
One in Mexico, shout out
to but I would really like to see, is there anything over in like Japan, China, like are they growing in the same trajectory that you know the rest of the world is? I don't know. I'd love to see that.
I didn't look at the full report, which I should have, and I'm going to. This is such great ammunition for me to go to the parks, you know, Chicago parks people and be like, look, it's blowing up everywhere.
Look how behind you are.
But there's still zero here. Come on.
Yeah.
Like it's going to be part of our presentation at some point, and I will go through it. But 1,500 new courses, and that's relevant because we know Delwood has been on the list as one of the top courses in the world for a while now. Like how many years consecutively have you been on that list? Do you know?
So they started doing it in 2020 and we were number 5 that first year.
Awesome.
Last year we dropped 3 spots to number 8.
Mm-hmm.
And then this year, once they released the article, we dropped 2 out of the top 10, unfortunately, but that's okay because of the reason why. Number 22. 22 out of 14,000 ain't too bad, dog.
Yeah. Right. So if there is 1,500 new courses in the last year, and you dropped 14 spots.
Yeah.
Pretty damn good.
Yeah.
That basically means 1,490 of them, or 1,495 of them were worse than Delwood.
Right.
Yeah.
And what you also see from the release is that all of the top 10 courses are now private courses.
Pay to play private
courses. So that's very interesting.
Privately funded with a ton of money.
As where, you know, most other places like Delwood are working on shoestring budgets. Again, I'll take it.
I didn't look at the courses that were actually on the list. So these private courses, I'd like to understand kind of who's building them. Where's the money coming from? Should we just run down the list?
Yeah. You want to take it or you want me to take it?
If you got it, go back
and forth. That'll be fun to watch you guys go back and forth.
Okay.
Call and response. Here we go.
Sean, you do one.
Top 10 disc golf courses in the world
you do 10. Sorry, not one. You're going to start.
Oh, we're going to count down. Yeah, sure. Yeah. As of 2022.
Uh-huh.
Starting with number 10, that is Blue Ribbon Pines in East Bethel, Minnesota, USA.
Which is not a surprise.
Has anyone played it?
I've never been to Blue Ribbon Pines. I've heard only awesome things.
We've seen it on coverage a ton.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Mm-hmm. Looks like a destination course. Definitely want to go. Definitely.
If anyone has played one of the courses that we list, say something.
Sure.
Number 9, Flip City Disc Golf in Shelby, Michigan, USA.
Never heard of it.
I've played there twice.
Yep, we've played there.
And we've been there.
Haven't shut up about it since.
Right. We've referenced it a few times on the podcast. Mm-hmm. Great course. It's funny. We just had somebody in the shop the other day, two guys from Michigan, and we were talking about Flip. Even Michiganers? Is that a word?
Michiganders.
Michiganders. They were like, I don't know. There's better course. They were saying it's not Flip. There are other courses that are better than Flip in Michigan that should be representing the Mitten State. Instead of Flip.
Well, you have to take into consideration this is U-Disc's stats.
Totally.
I mean, there's no denying the fact that these lists are valid, but it's via U-Disc. So
it's people's personal feelings are kind of like, and part of why Flip is because of like the lore and like people love, it's like the vibe.
Yeah,
it's not necessarily
right
the most
now, there's
course.
No other way to quantify it.
Right.
So it's just kind of what good people, on them for doing it. Yeah.
I'm sure you guys have already looked. Are there, in the top 10, are there multiple states represented? Or is there 10 courses in 10 different states?
10 courses in 10 different states and or countries.
Okay. So essentially, not only are they saying that these are the top 10 courses, they're also essentially saying that they're the best course in that state.
They have those stats available as well.
But I'm just by default, right? Like if there's no other course.
Right. If it's top 10 in the world, it's going to be the number one course in the state.
And you're saying that those people from Michigan were saying that it's not even the best course in the state?
Based on their opinion.
Yeah. Well, sure. It's like guys from Fairfield saying Fairfield's better than Delaware because they live closer to
people
Fairfield.
People from Illinois that have squawked every year that Delhi's been in the top 10.
Yeah. There's also like, again, the feeling that you have is influenced. And I don't know what they based these ratings on, because is it the number of rounds played at those courses? Is it the number of like average ratings players are giving it? You know, I don't know what is defining best, you know. Anyways, where were we?
Let me read what UDisc has here in this article, and that will help us kind of get there.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
How did you create the rankings, as if this is like a frequently asked question to UDisc? 2022's World's Best Disc Golf Courses rankings are based on a system that gave recent course ratings by disc golfers with UDisc more weight than older ones. Additionally, we took into account how harshly or easily different regions tend to rate courses and made adjustments to even out those differences. Finally, courses with low numbers of ratings received penalties. Interesting.
So if you're from an area that doesn't have a lot of courses and you don't have as much of a frame of reference and you just think, well, you know, we have five courses in the state and this is the best one.
Five star.
Yeah, your vote shouldn't count as much as somebody from Joliet who's got, you know, six courses right here of, you know, major varying levels of difficulty and fun.
But on the other end of that spectrum, the top 10 courses, the new courses that have gone in that have made that list, it says the newer ratings are more heavily weighted.
Correct.
And Delwood has a billion ratings.
Right.
And so that may have worked.
Dating back to 2014.
Yeah, that may have worked against Delwood's rating. I'm not saying that Delwood should be higher or lower. I'm just saying the rating system may have been.
That kind of worked against them a little.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
But all of those deserve to be where they are anyway. So.
Do you ever look at the top 250 movies on IMDb?
Yeah, all the time. Yeah.
So sometimes a movie comes out like this, let's say it came out this year and it's in the top 250 of all time.
Right.
A lot of the times that happens probably for the same reason. It's new, so it's weighted differently. Mm-hmm. And like a couple years later, that movie is not in the top 250 anymore.
It's just way down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So some of these courses that may have gotten big surges because they're new may not necessarily be in that same position.
Yeah, some of them had a lot of hype, and I could see how that could be the case.
Definitely.
And thank God, as we get to this crazy number of 14,000 courses worldwide, that there are ones that are better than existing courses. Shouldn't that absolutely be the case?
Yes, like, absolutely.
Thank God this is the case.
Plus, nobody rated the Hellwood course. That should be on the list.
Yeah, that's true. Come on, man.
Yeah.
They're all within 30 feet.
And Callahan Acres isn't on the list either. But
yeah, well, we'll get there. Moving on to number eight.
Number eight, right? Yeah.
We are on number eight now.
Already.
Caliber Disc Golf Course in Sandpoint, Idaho, U.S. of A. Never heard of it. I do know that's not too far from where Jason Oxen.
I was just
going to
say, Jason Oxen posts about Sandpoint all the time. Yeah. So
that's really cool to see another maybe similar situation to Delhi, where I know he's super involved and running a lot of events out there. So that's great to hear because he's a confidant, and I'm happy to hear that things are going
well.
He's
a rad dude. I hope he had something to do with
his area, for sure.
Nice.
Numero siete. Eagles Crossing Disc Golf Course in Hawk Point, Missouri.
That's one USA. That has had a lot of hype.
So much buzz.
It looks awesome.
Yeah.
We've seen coverage from that. And
there was a GK Pro Skins match last year.
It just looks
the first debut.
It looks kind of larger than life.
Yeah. There's like large concrete alligator lawn ornaments.
Right.
I love that.
That's crazy cool.
Yeah, like, it is absolutely.
But you're not going to see that anywhere else.
No.
You guys just made me think of something. For somebody that has never been to that state, let alone played that disc golf course.
You've never been to Missouri?
What is that? No. I just mean for one, myself. Okay. How do you find out that they exist? Just
U-Disc.
Through social? U-Disc. How do you find out what they look like? What is it just coverage that you might see on Jomez or something like that?
If you don't live
there and don't frequent there, is that the only way to find out what it looks like?
You can go on U-Disc or Disc Golf Course Review, dggcoursereview.com, where people post their reviews and photos and like write-ups of the course.
There's just enough disc golf on my Facebook feeds and things that like you get the keywords and you get the buzz. Local pros have gone and played them, and like Zach Finwall won't shut up about it.
Right.
And like when he won't, then I have to take it seriously. Sure. You know, so that's how I hear about a lot of it.
Number six, Brewster Ridge Disc Golf Course Smugglers Notch Resort in Vermont, US of A. Mm-hmm. Totally deserving.
Yeah.
Two courses over at Brewster's Ridge, because that's where they have Green Mountain Championships.
Yeah. Do they combine them at some? I don't remember. But yeah, it's a series of, like, it's a conglomeration of disc golf up there.
And that's crazy. Where Jeff Spring got his, started those courses. So that's kind of what the foundation that he built to become who he is today, doing what he's doing with TGPT. Mm-hmm. So
were they in the top 10 before?
Yes.
That's what I thought. That one's been in there for a while and deservedly so.
Yep.
Yeah. I really am glad that I don't have the next one. I don't know how to pronounce it, and I don't think you do. So number five is Kipaswo Pro at Heinola Disc Golf Park World, Heinola, Finland. Matt's Adam Zach would roll over if you heard me try and say that.
Yeah.
But you're now, man, with the next one.
Uh-oh. Let's go back here. Oh, there's a slash through the O.
Overas
Disc Golf Park in Vestnes, Norway.
Okay, let's go with that.
Close that's enough. Got periodic symbols in the name.
Yeah, I mean, that's a crazy one.
I don't have any frame of reference for those.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got nothing on it as I'm clicking the link. But here's an interesting fact. Year Open 2013. So new in the grand scheme of disc golf, but
not new.
Not new. And this one that is new to the top 100.
And I really like watching coverage from over in Europe and the Netherlands and what they're doing over there. I think Gatekeeper had some coverage that happened over the summer, and they just released it not too long ago, and it looks amazing. I just have no idea where it was from. The disc golf up there is on another level.
One day we're going to do a UD goes global, and we're going to road trip to Finland or somewhere.
Mm-hmm. You know, we can't really road trip to Finland, but
air trip.
Okay. Trip. All right. Yeah. Okay.
Or we could swim.
Swim trip.
Yeah.
Swim trip.
Okay.
Number three, Hillcrest Farm, Bonshaw, Prince Edward Island, Canada.
Mm. I don't know anything about that one.
But shout out to our neighbors to the north. I love me some Canada.
Mm. Good people. Truly.
Yeah.
Mostly.
I used to like the exchange rate when I was in high school and college, because we could go gamble, and then when you lost $100, you're like, oh, it was actually only $60. I don't feel so bad.
Nice.
Not now.
Not so much.
Not anymore.
Number two, Krakol Disc Golf Course in Sigurd, Norway. That's probably butchered.
Sigurd.
Butchered.
It sounded more accurate, but it's probably just as wrong.
Yeah. Sure. Because he said it like he was from Japan.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yep.
Sigurd.
Yeah. Not even close.
Year Open 2018.
Newer
in the grand scheme.
And number one, Maple Hill Disc Golf in Leicester, Massachusetts, USA.
Leicester? Leicester.
I believe it's pronounced Leicester.
Leicester?
Yeah, Leicester.
It is Leicester?
It's like Worcestershire.
Ah, yeah. Why do they do that, man? Mm-hmm.
I don't know. The Brits love just throwing an extra letters in.
They do.
Mm-hmm.
Why does color need a U in it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Year Open 2002. That's true. And it was also number one last year. It may have been number one in 2020 as well.
You know, I would have to play that. That doesn't seem like the number one top course to me. With all of the other courses that I've seen, like Eagles Crossing, that looks like the Pebble Beach of disc golf courses. Like, just the way it's been designed and put together, maybe it's too new to overtake. Mm-hmm. But Maple Hill looks amazing, but it just doesn't look like, I don't know.
I'm going to say that's a situation where I bet the culture around that facility has just got that vibe that makes it that place.
Yeah, once it's a destination, you by the time you finally book the trip and you go up there with your friends, everybody is so hyped about being there.
Is that, like,
it colors your experience. Yeah. The same way, like, when I finally went to Flip, I did walk away thinking, like, that's one of the greatest courses I'm ever going to play.
Is that to them their Sandy Point?
Right.
You know?
Like, it's probably like a Sandy Point dipped in Delwood and rolled in Northwoods. Like, it's all of those things in one place. And then also has this massive event that's been going on there for a long time and all the buzz around that. So,
and I've watched the coverage for so long that probably if I did end up going there and playing, I would feel it too.
Yeah, that's a special one to watch. Must have to. I look forward to seeing the MVP open on Jomez. That's that's awesome.
Very grateful that we have UDisc collecting and aggregating all this information.
Oh, yeah.
Encouraging players to rate the courses. How many rounds a day are being played in this geographic area? Like, being able to go show the Park District people and all these other entities where courses could be. No, you can't argue with numbers. It's so valuable for the growth of the sport. So it's like a cycle that's feeding itself because people want to play. They're tracking the data. They're showing other people, hey, look how many people are playing, and that is allowing for more disc golf to happen because the
snowballs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's so great.
Yeah, I've forwarded this article to the Park District every year, and I mean, to the point where Dave asks all when he sees me, he's like where are we now? What number are we now? So it's going to be fun. I haven't had that conversation with him yet. But
maybe, I mean, not knowing what we know, when you're like, oh, we only got 22nd, maybe that lights a fire.
Yeah. You know? I mean, that's, hey, let's get those bridges in and let's get those four holes back and let's kick it up a notch. And
let's get some cement alligators.
Cement alligators. Let's do
that, lawn has ornaments. Come up ever, like the idea of having some kind of piece of art? Like, I think of 50 Acre has that big Groot tree trunk. Like, has that ever been discussed about doing something like that?
I still want to push a giant pond in the middle of hole 8.
Oh, I think about it daily. Yeah.
Just dig a pond that takes about 325 to get over.
Yeah.
From the shorts.
Right.
Like,
so that some people have to lay up and then throw over.
Oh, yeah. You know, and just put a little fountain in or put a concrete alligator in the middle of it or whatever it takes.
I've also wanted to do like just a really nice legit flagpole with a flag out there, like reading the wind and just kind of like a nice thing.
Dude.
And that would be cool too with like World War II days and the things that they do. Yeah. So
a giant
that would be
American flag just flapping. Yeah. Oh, dude.
With just a little baby Delwood disc golf flag underneath it. Hey, we're here too.
It needs to be a cement JJ, doesn't it? That make the most sense.
Oh.
Holding the flagpole.
Maybe JJ on top of the cement alligator. Yeah. Like he's riding it.
Like holding the flagpole and then with his head turned and he's spitting out and that's the fountain. Spitting one direction and holding
on a concrete alligator with a saddle. Like he's riding it.
It's that simple.
Yeah.
Riding
Lockport.
Uh-huh. All right.
Get your freaking poop in a group.
Right. Yeah. Let's get it together. But it's cool to see that number one is still in the States. That's regardless of where you're from.
Yeah.
That's,
oh, true.
That's a cool thing. That's a united front there. So
I wonder what the distribution of UDisc users is across the world too, if that's the way it's skewed, because you know, the United States has just far more users, or if the rankings are really in the United States' favor because they're better. But
like trying to get Netflix to release their data on streaming.
Sure.
It's not gonna happen.
No, it's never gonna happen.
Yeah, they put out stuff with these articles, but there's still a lot left that goes unanswered every year. But that's okay. I mean, we don't need to know all the details. It's just like Alex said, it's just cool that this is happening.
Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Yeah. Do you ever get to share this data with like Lockport visitors and convention bureau type people? Like I bring this up because Matt's was saying that with his experiment of using disc golf as a tourist draw, being able to show all the tourism department, basically, look how many people played rounds of disc golf here during this time. And look how many of those people were not, you know, not from here.
Right.
That's the evidence to like, we should put more resources into this. It's working. Like, does Delwood have any of that going on with like the Lockport?
As an employee of Delwood, I can say.
Thanks for taking this one, Jason.
I went so far as to buy a map for them to put up here in the shop so people could place a pin of where they're from and have that on display here in the shop, but that hasn't happened yet. So,
That's a cool idea.
Would have been a nice visual element to add to that. But
No, that did not.
Well, it doesn't answer my question, but I think it's cool.
Well, I think that, you know, exactly the information that UDisc collects is that virtual map with pins in it. Hmm. And just recently, Sheila got us signed up to be a part of the Chamber of Commerce in Lockport.
That's what's up.
That's exciting. And we're going to be going to the mayor's State of the City in April. So we are getting to that stage now.
Dude.
As we have built the business and we're going to be, you know, kind of letting people know that are in Lockport that maybe know, oh yeah, I think there's a course over there. Like, this is what's actually happening.
You start to get some of these other business owners out here to understand what it could be. Like, you could have an event or two a year that bring a couple thousand people extra to Lockport.
All of Lockport is really taking for granted what this park brings to Lockport, and especially the disc golf course, like the hotels and the restaurants.
Every little gas station along the way.
Little gas station,
Another thing that we've been working on with Lauren Lakeberg is we now have a Delwood Disc Golf brochure that we will... Yes, there it is. Ryan's got it. That highlights this stuff.
Did you have to find that sound effect and add it, or was that natural?
Yeah.
Oh, very nice.
That's literally the brochure.
And on the back of it has information for all the local restaurants and breweries and eateries, which... We work with Nick and Ivy all the time. Right. They have sponsored events. They sponsored the GJTS TDTC last year, and we did the live draft there. They sponsored Fraction Run Cup last year. They're also sponsoring Fraction Run Cup for this year.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it's great. I mean, they see it, because when we go in and we have conversations, it's always, oh, the disc golfers. Yeah. We know about the disc golfers.
We like them.
Yeah.
Up until the last couple of years, it's like pulling teeth to get sponsorships from venues like this. And once you go as far as you guys are going, I think that's going to start to turn around.
Right.
I think those hands are going to come from them reaching out to, you know, to Delwood rather than us trying to get a couple gift certificates or get them to list something in the, you know.
You guys have no idea how much free shit I get around town when all I have to do is pull out my driver's license and show my last name.
Wait, they don't recognize you by face?
Well, no, because I'm recognize him.
Well, it's the beard. The beard is confused people.
Right. Yeah.
If you trim the beard, right? Yeah.
Well, he's a Balchinian, so they're like, hey, what's up, Men in Black, right?
That's right.
The reason I wanted to ask about that is because every time I go to Ledgestone and I go to these hotels that are like full, like booked solid, they've got to love the disc golfers, because why else is anybody going to Morton, Illinois ever?
Yeah.
You know, for that whole week
for
of
the
Ledgestone.
Pumpkin Fest.
I know you're making that up, but.
They think they're the pumpkin capital of the world. You didn't know that?
Is that real?
That's 100% real.
Oh, shit. Your smile.
My roommate
really
freshman year at Eastern Illinois was from Morton. He claims.
Sorry, Morton.
He claims.
People, my fault.
That's the reason that Billy Corgan named the band Smashing Pumpkins, is because he was dating a girl who was from Morton. And that was his little joke when they broke up. He, honest, hand to God, this is what he told me. I don't know if it's true.
Can you just tell us the story without smirking like you're making it all up?
There's no punchline. I'm sorry. I know. I
how many beans did
I've
he eat?
I built
Jason?
This for myself.
Yeah.
I'm aware.
Yeah.
But I swear to God, his name is Mike. He was my roommate. I didn't pick him. We were just randomly put together. He was from Morton, Illinois. And that was his story, that he claimed his mom had an old VHS tape of them filming something in the town. Like, she had recorded them recording something.
A really unexpected, cool.
That's why Billy Corgan named the band Smashing Pumpkins, was to make fun of Morton, Illinois, who claims to be the pumpkin capital of the world. It's the inflections of the way that you talk that sound like,
and
you're
kind of
just
like
going to go
and you start,
because it was too far to.
Because
every single
you kind of chuckle to yourself a little bit, like you can't hold it in.
And?
Pumpkin capital of the world, and it says Morton, Illinois.
Wow.
Truth.
Okay, so my apologies.
85% of the world's canned pumpkin is packaged in the
Nestle. Oh, canned pumpkin?
In Morton, Illinois. Huh.
So yes, my apologies to people from Morton.
They have an annual pumpkin.
There's more there than disc golf. But the point is, all those hotels gotta love.
That's a busy 2 weeks there. Yeah,
They gotta... I can't imagine what percentage of the revenue for the year, but like it makes up a very real portion of their business.
Sure.
Every year. Mm-hmm. There's no reason why Delwood's not on the same track with Lockport.
Yeah.
You know, if you guys get that like week long type event at some
point. I would love
to
have seen what Clash did last year.
Right. Oh, numbers wise for local businesses, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, now that you're...
Where the spike in their revenue happened, if it timed in with it,
I imagine being in the Chamber of Commerce means they're going to want to know that kind of stuff.
Sure.
So that's a very cool
By the way, you're going to put the theme music for Parks and Rec behind
all of this while we're talking about, right?
Oh, the whole time.
Also, to be mentioned, top 10 disc golf cities in the USA. Mm-hmm. Number 2, Chicagoland. That's pretty cool. We'll definitely take that.
I think that also has to do with the just the sheer volume of people that are using U-Disc.
There can't be many other places in the world that have six. How many good, like, we have a legitimate 5 to 6 great courses out here. You can live in any little pocket of Chicagoland, mm-hmm. and there's right. options for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that is why it is so highly rated, is because of the distribution of courses and how pocketed it is wherever you, I mean, how many clubs do we have around here that are centralized around a certain course?
Right.
Right.
That's why Chicago is such a freaking conundrum. There's so mm-hmm. many people there. No courses, and everywhere just outside, like you get just outside the city, mm-hmm. and it's abundant, mm-hmm. and the demand is crazy.
Yep.
So it's, I'm very excited for that day when we really break ground on a proper course. If you go on UDisc, there's like a temp course in Jackson Park where we had done our big event, but mm-hmm. it's not a course. And it's actually not.
That's funny because those are the only comments on that
right.
YouTube video, right. the Jomez video. We're like, well, I just looked up the course and it looks like it's not even in commission. Like,
it's not. It's
shut
like,
up.
We're in between. It's a work in progress, and yeah. like nothing there is permanent. And it's like, A, it's dope that progress is being made. Mm-hmm. I really think where this is going to end up is a Tiger Woods golf course with the Paul McBeth disc golf course on it. Mm-hmm. I think that's how this is going to end up playing out. That's part of the thing that's like slowing down the progress right now, is they have these multi-million dollar, you know, organizations that are buying the land, developing it. They're putting the Tiger Woods disc golf course right over there.
Let's along try again. With Tiger Woods golf course.
Sorry, the Tiger Woods golf course, and the evidence for like the best way to combat the problem with putting a very exclusive golf course in an area like that is it's not accessible to the community. Like the actual people that live there, they're not going to be able to afford to go play at the Tiger Woods golf course, but they could afford to play the Paul McBeth disc golf course that's right alongside it, or mm-hmm. you know, on a little portion of it.
Yeah.
And that makes such a cool destination for Chicago.
It absolutely.
The number one golfer yeah. and the number one disc golfer in the world, that's their courses are both right here. Like yeah. that's where I really hope/believe it will end up.
I have visited some of the top golf courses in the country, and places like Pebble Beach, like I didn't play obviously, but going out there and stepping on the 18th green and just, you know, you're on the water, you see the building behind you, you see yeah. everything about it. Just being on those grounds makes you feel surreal. Mm. And so if you could play on a disc golf course that is on the grounds of a golf course like the Tiger Woods golf course.
On the lakefront of Chicago.
Right. I think that would...
Get the chills?
I'd be there. Yeah, I do. Yeah. I'd be there every damn day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it just great. Sounds amazing.
It was one of the lines I kind of dropped when we first reached out to the Paul McBeth Foundation. Was like, yo, the Tiger Woods Foundation is putting a golf course here. I don't have to spell it out for you guys. Tiger Woods golf course, Paul McBeth disc golf course. Let's talk. And they got right back to us.
Sure.
Don't let what you read on UDisc about that Jackson Park thing. It's irrelevant. It's not going to be the way it is in like a few months from now. It's going to be different.
Right.
So yeah.
If you're doing it right, it's never the same thing all the time. You have to constantly be changing and growing everything you're doing.
Correct.
Anything and everything. Mm-hmm. Just recently, Dave Herman got called me and said, there's another park over in Crest Hill on the other side of the 9th Street Bridge, 15 minutes from Delwood, where they don't have much going on at the park. So he said, get over there and take a look at it and see what we can do over there. So that's fun.
Okay.
I hope you're ready to get a bunch of questions now.
From people. Of course.
Yeah.
That's all I do.
Are you going to get that course in before you get the eights in and the bridge?
Right. Yeah. So we'll go over there and check it out. We were looking at some like floodplain maps, and it definitely looks like there's some areas that are unusable, but it's a pretty big space. And even Dave said like, hey, it could be a 9-hole course with 2 tee pads. And, you know, you never know what each situation is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's totally okay for them to be different. It doesn't have to be
yeah.
a 27-hole course that's number 22 in the world.
Right.
You know, just
beginner disc golf stuff at
all.
Is good too.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. So, mm-hmm. I mean, just like we did all the red tees out here the past fall, you know, that was always part of the plan and people are loving it.
There's also the fact that this course is so popular now that give some of the newer players another place to play, spread
right.
things out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably good for everybody.
We need Trinity. So. Trinity Links needs to open back up.
That's a thing too.
Badly.
Thank you,
Jason.
Jason, thank you.
When is that going to happen?
I'm on it. It's got a lot of shit going on right now. Get there, don't worry.
Okay, so before we get out of here, we do need to get into the little tiny baby mailbag. We didn't get a lot of questions this time around.
It's okay.
Not sure what's going on there, but don't matter. There's a couple things in there. Jason, take us into the mailbag. Mail time.
Mail time.
Mail time.
Mail time. That was pretty good.
Where do we go from here? Let's start with Kyle Greenfield. He wants to know when Ryan Fanter is going to stop talking about getting the tattoo and actually do it. Hashtag longest running bit. What's the tattoo?
Well, it started off as the Unstable Discourse tattoo, and we were going to do it live on air.
Okay, that's what I thought, right?
But then COVID hit. We can't have 10 people in a tattoo parlor while one... It just didn't logistically work out. I did, however, talk to him a few days ago, probably right before he sent the mailbag question. And he said he was going to get the Unstable Squirrel tattooed. And he asked for my permission.
Whoa.
And that...
What if you change your logo in a couple of years?
I know, right? That brought a tear to my eye. And I said, Kyle, if you do it, I'm going to get it.
Where's
I can't. I can't just have you get that.
Sure.
And he was like, it's my favorite logo in the world. And I was like, I got to tell you, it's kind of mine too, not just because it's mine, but because it turned out as well as it did. And I'll get it with you too. And he was like, yeah, whatever. And I was like, where's your tattoo parlor? And he's like, oh, it's over here on Route 30 by this and this. And I was like, I was just there. I got my last tattoo there. So when you sign up for that, tell him you're doing two. And so I don't know when that's going to be, but we're doing it. He doesn't think I'm real, but it's real.
I reached out to Jackie T-Horn's sister, Crystal Thorns. She's a really talented artist. And she's down to tat us up. But I also said, what about us recording a podcast while we do this?
Yeah.
And then I have not heard back about
that. Oh, of course. Well, we might have to talk to Jackie T-Horns about that. But it's going to happen. Kyle, don't worry about it.
Nice.
So,
speaking of Jackie T-Horns, he's got our second question in the bag tonight. And there is no dicks or dinosaurs involved in this question whatsoever. Yeah, I know. Right.
No dicks or dinosaurs.
Yeah. He wants to know if we would rather get punched in the face by a prime Mike Tyson once a month for the rest of our life, or have to talk like him for the rest of our life.
Oh my God.
As a podcaster, the talking like that might be hard.
If you got punched it would take you a month to recover.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you're
Was there a caveat in there about how like you won't get brain damage or anything?
Nope.
You would get brain damage if you just
You're not surviving. We're just regular dudes.
We're talking about fractured skulls once a month.
Right. Yeah. Right.
No.
Rather talk like
Give me the lift.
Yeah.
I'd rather talk like him.
You can also make it work. Like if that was you had to talk like that, you could make it cool.
I mean, he did.
You know, in the last...
I did?
Yeah. No, he did.
He did.
Yeah. Mike Tyson did.
Well, he was that big. Who's going to tell him otherwise?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah.
I have heard on NPR and I heard on the Olympics, one of the announcers, they had pretty prominent speech disabilities of whatever, and they made it work. And I was like, damn, good for you. I mean, you're on the world stage and you can't say your S's and you're making this work. Good for you. So I would take that.
Yeah, sure.
I'm going to take that.
That's an easy one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't like getting punched. I've been punched very few times and I didn't enjoy any of them.
Really?
Yeah. None. Have you ever been in a fight?
I have. Like when I was a child.
Pause. Lauren is shaking her head in the background. Lauren, have you been in a fist fight?
Oh, was it like pulling hair, rolling around? Yeah. Or was it? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Please.
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember what we were fighting about. But I remember throwing a Mountain Dew bottle across the yard and hitting my friend in her head.
Wow, scoped her.
And she had me on the ground and she was trying to rip my hair out of my head. I don't even know what we were fighting about. Like, I don't even remember.
She was like, Mountain Dew's the best. And you're like, I'll show you it's the best.
I knocked her out.
Suck on this
we
bottle.
We also,
of Mountain Dew.
As a group, had a mud fight in front of the front yard of my friend's house. The neighbors took pictures. We never got to see those.
This girl's mud wrestling. What do you expect?
Yeah, right?
So you've had multiple fights.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, it's the person you'd expect, obviously, Lauren Lakeberg. Yeah.
It's very aggressive.
Yeah.
So wait, have you ever been like hit in the head?
I don't know. No.
Maybe she
maybe
has.
Maybe so hard you don't remember.
Doesn't remember.
You don't remember anymore.
I don't know. I mean, that might have of happened in that fight where she was like ripping my hair out. Like that part, I remember. Like
you
would remember
when you get hit in the head. You, that's an experience. Yeah. You'll remember that.
Yeah, no.
Jason, yes or no?
What? Oh, let's hear it.
I want fight stories before we go. This is too interesting to me.
Stupid. I had my best friend was an instigator, and he would like, you know, so and so said this, and then he would just start fights just to see what would happen.
Wow.
So I would get into fights with people all the time because my best friend would.
90s, man. Early 90s.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Just fights say, for no reason.
Like,
oh, we got to do this now.
He said something about your mom. Picking on the boy. And then like we would just, sing go at hummus. It.
Yeah. Wow, that's little badass.
Start throwing haymakers and stuff. Mm. Yeah.
That's so
dumb. I've never been punched in the face.
Have you ever punched anybody?
No, never in the face.
Have you ever wanted to?
Constantly.
Have you ever been close to like really cocking somebody?
No, I don't think so.
Damn. Yeah. Sean, I know you've hit somebody.
No, never have. I've never hit someone or been hit in the face.
Wow.
I'm a peaceful lion.
I've been punched and have punched multiple times. First one I remember was Drew Schneider in second grade.
Newman!
Drew.
Newman.
He might listen to this.
Newman.
Drew. Probably grew up to be a decent guy, but playground fight that ended with me on top of him, like slamming his head on the sidewalk.
Oh, no.
Fifth grade, some kid on the bus who was bigger than my dad at the time, and my dad was a big guy. I was like showing my Pokemon cards, my binder to my friends, and the kid was like, let me see your Pokemon cards. And I was like, nah. And so he just took them out of my hands, but he was huge. And so I just kind of waited and waited. And like when he was not paying attention, I stole him back. And I was like, now leave me alone. Hoping he would leave me alone because I knew I was going to get killed. But he was like, you know what? When we get off the bus, I'm going to kick your ass. And I was like, let's see it, tough guy. You know, I got a reputation to uphold. There's all these people.
Yeah, you
got
to talk the talk.
We got off the bus. I threw my backpack down and I was like, what's up? I thought you were going to teach me a lesson. And he was calmly stood there and said, I'm just waiting for the bus to leave. And then the bus left and then he beat the shit out of me. I got up, just held my face and walked home crying. And he hit me so hard that like my bruise, half of my face was green. It was like a green bruise. It was weird.
Sure.
And my dad got home and saw it. He's like, what the hell happened? And I was like, this kid took my cards and then I stole my cards back. And then he said he was going to kick my ass. So we got in a fight. And he went over to the kid's house, which is like embarrassing.
No, yeah.
I stayed home. I was like, I'm not coming with you to the kid's house.
No.
So he got back and he's like, that kid is bigger than me. Like, I'm sorry you had to go through that. That sucked. But he like talked to the kid's dad and I don't know whatever else happened. It makes you feel alive though. I'll say that. And that's a wrap on this episode.
Yeah. Right.
On that note.
Yeah. On that note, thank you guys for listening. Stay tuned. More episodes coming. We'll drop more info about the live episode as soon as we have it.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for being here. Peace.
See ya.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Unstable Discourse is a Top Secret Studios production.